Hey everyone, welcome back. Thanks for tuning in. Today on the show, we're going to be going over the latest episode of Survivor South Pacific. We're down to seven people. It's going to be seven, as we've talked about before on this show. It's going to be a big number in terms of Survivor. We're going to get to that in a second. And then after that, we're going to be looking back on previous seasons at other famous and memorable Final Seven situations. I should tell you, my name is Colin. With that, I'm going to bring in my partner, Dom. Dom, how you doing?
Hey everybody, welcome back. I'm sorry if you're getting this, if you're hearing this late. I've had some trouble recording, you know, finding time to do it, and the software has been a bit tricky as well. But hopefully you're hearing this, and hopefully you're going to enjoy it.
Absolutely. So, Dom, do you want to go over why 7 is such an important number in Survivor?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to be focusing on this for pretty much the entirety of the episode, so I think it's helpful to look at why it's so important. In general, the tribal councils where an odd number of players are left are the most important ones, because they're the ones where players have the most opportunity to shake up the game. And generally this is because at an odd number, a smaller majority is needed than at an even number. So, for instance, at the final 7, you only need a majority of 4, whereas at the final 8, say, you need a majority of 5. And so one of the ideas that politics students might be familiar with is the idea of a minimum winning coalition. That is to say, if you have a set of interest groups who have the same interest, you want that group to be as small as possible so that there's less disagreement over what the optimal plan should be or the final goal should be. And while this doesn't translate exactly to Survivor, the same idea kind of holds. Right, so odd number tribal councils are the most important. And we're looking at this in the context of the post-merge. So we're going to be looking at final 5, final 7, final 9, potentially final 11 if they're merging at 12. So of those, why is final 7 the most important? Well, if you wait until the final 5 to try and make something happen, you're putting yourself at a big risk because, you know, there's only one or two tribal councils left until the final 2, final 3. And so if someone wins immunity at the wrong time or something happens that you're not anticipating, that can shake up your plans far too much. If you try and do it too early at the final 9, then there's still a lot of time left for other players to try and launch a counterattack. Whereas if you wait until the final 7, the end game's still in sight. But there's still time to maybe accommodate things that you weren't planning for.
That's right. All right, so the new episode, we're down to 7 people. We have in one corner the Sixipolu, and on the other side, Cochran. And it, you know, it, leading up, it's been clear Cochran's kind of 7th, but now this is his chance after that famous flip to kind of get back into the game. And the players left, we have obviously our coach, Rick, Albert, Brandon, and Sophie. And those appear to be 5 strong from what we've seen so far. And then we have Edna and Cochran kind of out on the outs. At least they're at varying degrees of knowing about it on how far on the outside they are. But anyway, the episode begins, and the morning after tribal council, they're all sitting around camp, and Cochran says, "You know what? I'm going to get up. I'd really like to stay in this game." He lies, says his birthday's 3 days away, that he'd really like to stay in, and he wants to give Upolu time to sit and talk amongst themselves, the 6 of them, about whether or not they want to give him another shot at staying in or whether they just want to pick him out and take him out 7th. Now, to me, this seemed like something I probably wouldn't be doing, letting them sit and all just agree to take me out. I want to know if you think there was a reason Cochran did it, to maybe improve his own game, or any kind of reason that he did it.
Well, I think it's important to note that it's Upolu minus Edna at that point. So he may be thinking that, well, there's no chance of anything really big happening. It's either going to be me or Edna, and I'm going to try and make sure it's Edna. To me, while that might be the most realistic situation for him, it's kind of a defeatist attitude, because if Edna goes to Final 7, he's gone to Final 6 anyway. It, like Jim said earlier in the season, you have to play to get to the end and win. You can't just hope to survive in the game for 3-6 more days.
That's right, and this would actually probably be a good time to bring this up. We do a lot of talking on this show about what people should be doing, and I think something we should establish is at the base of all of those moves that we say people should be doing is that we're operating under one assumption. And it's very simple. It's always be closing, which is to say, we're playing for first place and first place only. Are you on board with that?
Right. In some situations, you can argue, you know, second place gets $100,000. And for some people, that's a life-changing amount of money. They can play for that. But as analysts, we're looking at it from a purely dispassionate perspective. You're playing the game to win.
That's right. So I guess the next notable thing is we have, now we find out at Upolu camp that Albert, who we've seen kind of like the second in command to coach, trying to get things going. Maybe Upolu doesn't like or care for Albert or his attitude around camp, maybe as much as we thought, Rick in particular, which leads to this whole Prince Albert situation. Rick apparently had been calling Albert Prince Albert because he's lazy around camp. What do you think about that?
Well, firstly, I just want to point out how hilarious it is that Rick calls him that, seemingly unaware of how the phrase is actually used by Vasquez. You wonder if he was still calling that if he knew how it was commonly used, but anyway, that's a discussion for another time. To be honest, I'm not sure if this is something that was ever seriously considered by anyone. I mean, the tribe has been talking about loyalty since the very beginning. It's pretty clear at this point that if they stick to that, Cochran's gone. So this might just be something that the editors have taken out of context to try and make it look like there's some suspense here when there really isn't.
Yeah, I would say bad news for Albert. I think it was a segment just to bury him and get him kind of out of it.
That's right, and I think this might be being used by them as a way of showing why Albert loses, ultimately. You know, because we expect someone like him to do pretty well in a jury vote if he makes it there. This might be the editors trying to show us that this is why he loses if he does make Final Three.
That's a very good point. So now we have seven people left. Before the immunity challenge, it seems like Coach is in a very good position when he has, as we've described him now, his network of goats in place. So, assuming Coach has the votes that he wants, that he believes that he has in those three people, he can now take out whoever he wants. Before the immunity challenge, and we're going to disregard Ozzy for this bit, we'll definitely get to him later, Ozzy potentially coming off Redemption Island. Before immunity, even though Cochran is from Savai'i, who do you think Coach's best target is, if he could pick someone to leave?
It seems like there are two voters he can take. The first is, he can think that Edna is a better goat for him, and potentially Cochran as well, than someone like Albert or Sophie, and he tries to take out one of those two, preferably Albert if he doesn't win immunity. The other approach is to say that trying to break up the five-person alliance that he's had from day one at this point is too risky, because the advantage of keeping Cochran and Edna around is outweighed by the potential chaos that could happen if he does that.
That's exactly right. And, you know, there are obviously different schools of thought about his best boot at Final Seven. But if he has that, if he ends up sticking with that alliance of five from that they made on day one, you know, the Crabs Alliance, CRABS, Coach Rick, Albert, Brandon, Sophie, then I think, you know, once they get to Final Five and he then kind of, it looks at least to Brandon or to Albert and Sophie like, hey, my hands are tied. Like, I did what I said. I took you as far as I could. And now I kind of have to let you go. And I think that could definitely help him with the jury should he make it that far.
Right, and that's something we'll get into in more detail. It's important to think, though, that whichever way he decides to go, he has to commit to a plan. So let's say he decides to keep Edna and Cochran at Final Seven. He shouldn't then want one of them to go to Final Six because it's incongruent with what he did before. Similarly, if he decides to stick with the five and boot out Cochran, he should want to vote out Edna at Final Six, I think.
So I think we've been kind of in agreement. If I'm Coach, I'd probably want to be sitting in the final three with Brandon and either Edna or Rick. I think I'm definitely taking Brandon, first of all. Which means now, and also Cochran, I guess you could consider taking for sure, because he's probably burned all the Savai'i votes. That said, with that many kind of weapons at his disposal, I think it's really tempting to take Albert out at Final Seven. However, that doesn't end up becoming a possibility because Albert goes on to win immunity. So now with Albert immune, this becomes, we've talked a lot on this show about Alfie, which is the combination of Albert and Sophie, and it seems like if they're ever going to do anything, now that they've passed on their chance at Final Nine, they're now at Final Seven, is this their time that they should be trying to open up and get it, make a move on Coach with Cochran and Edna?
That might be the case. Again, it depends on their read on Coach, which is something that we don't have access to as viewers, so yeah. It may be that we're analysing this on the basis of something which is inaccurate given what's actually happening out there. But in the dark, I'd say that it's definitely correct for them to turn on Coach at this point, if they can do that.
Yeah, and the question, when looking at this situation, you know, obviously we end up seeing what happens, which is Cochran gets voted out. I probably should have mentioned that in the beginning. Cochran goes, and we're now down to Sixupolu. The question becomes, you know, we've regarded Brandon, Rick, and Edna as members of Coach's network of goats. How can Albert and Sophie now deal with that? And the thing is, are they also under Coach's control and to the point where if he can beat them, they're also just his goats?
Yeah, if he can beat Albert and Sophie as well, then the only thing he has to worry about at this point is Ozzy returning from Redemption Island.
And I guess in terms of Alfie, because as far as I can see, they both should probably by now have identified each other as very strong thinking players, at least. But they don't even see, every time Albert tries to bring up some uprising against Coach, Sophie never seems interested in it. So the only conclusion I could draw from that is that Sophie thinks she can beat Coach and thinks he will take her. Do you think that's realistic?
Well, I'm not really sure what to think about Sophie, because in one of the secret scenes that they show on the CBS website, she said that she's not scared about Ozzy coming back into the game and making it to the final three, because sure, he might pick up some of the Savai'i votes, but she can pick up all the rest. And to me, that suggests that she's just unaware of the dynamics that are going on with the jury. Of course, it may be that we're the ones that are unaware and that she knows something that we don't. But again, we can only make these judgments on the basis of what we see in the episodes. And there's no way that Ozzy should even be entertained as going to the final three if he doesn't win immunity at any point.
Yeah, I agree. And I think this is a good time to factor in, you know, normal seasons, you don't have to worry about returning players. And even in the case of most Redemption Islands, you don't have that fear, because the way Redemption Island just almost always is going to play out is the returning player is just going to get booted as soon as possible. But when you're dealing with a returning player that's Ozzy, and that returning player is presumably coming back in at Final Five, because that's what they did last time, Ozzy's then two challenges away from sitting at the Final Tribal Council, and as far as I can tell, locking up the million. What do you think about that?
Right. Well, last season it was less of a concern, because the person who's in coach's position then, who was Boston Rob, is someone who was very good at challenges himself, so he could realistically hope to compete with whoever it was that returned. And as it happened, it was Andrea, who was probably the least likely to go on some sort of run and make it to the Final Three. This season, though, it looks like Ozzy's returning for sure. Coach himself can't really compete with Ozzy, and the only people who really can are Albert and maybe Sophie.
Yeah, like I said before, if you're not dealing with someone who's in with the Redemption Island season, I'd probably be tempted to take out Albert at Final Seven. But now that you know Ozzy is very, you know, a solid favorite at least to come back off Redemption Island, keeping Albert is beginning to look more and more tempting, because I think if I'm coach, I have to assume that given what Ozzy's done in the game, he will win if he makes the finals, and I need to keep him from making the finals. And that's why Albert becomes more and more someone that I now want to keep rather than want to boot, for the same reasons that I would have wanted to boot him in the first place, because he can win challenges.
Right. If Albert is someone who can win at the Tribal Trial Council, then he's just as much a threat to coach as Ozzy is. If that's not the case, however, and coach can beat anyone, then, as we said before, his first priority has to be think about what's least likely to result in Ozzy coming back and getting to the final three. If he votes on Albert the final seven, assuming that he doesn't win immunity, then sure, you have the possibility that Albert wins on Redemption Island, maybe comes back, he'll be easier to beat. But if Albert loses at that point, then it's pretty much over as far as I can tell, unless one of the challenges is something that's tailored against Ozzy, like balance challenge or whatever, something like that.
Yeah, and you know, even with a balance challenge, it's hard to make a challenge tailored against Ozzy that's not just purely mental.
Right. It reminds me a bit of last season, where people were suggesting that a lot of the challenges were rigged for Boston Rob, whereas if you actually think about it, it's hard to think of a challenge that wouldn't be one that's naturally tailored to him unless it was something specifically designed so that he wouldn't win it.
Yeah, it's what you'd... Any challenge when the player's at one of the all-time great challenge competitors is going to be something they could conceivably win. Now, we saw a scene in the recap episode wherein Coach and Ozzy, it was back when they were both still in the main game, were talking, and Ozzy was kind of pleading with Coach to stay alive. Now, I was wondering why they would show us that scene in the recap when Ozzy's already off on Redemption Island and it's probably not going to factor in. So my line of thinking is, I don't know why they would waste the airtime to show that other than to get Coach and Ozzy on screen together, which is fine, and so be it. But do you think there's a chance that if Ozzy gets back in and loses any of the immunities once he's back in the regular game, that he actually can stay safe for a tribal council?
I don't think there is. I think that scene was included by the editors as part of their product, if you like, to bury Ozzy in the eyes of the viewers. If you remember, a lot of the recap scenes were just completely terrible for Ozzy. You had him being described as bullying Cochran, being outplayed by Coach, and all these things. So, to me, I don't think that's significant of anything that might happen in the future. It's just one of the things that they wanted to show because it's another example of Coach just outplaying Ozzy.
Sure.
Because if you remember, after that scene, we had the Coach Confessional where he's talking about how much of an idiot Ozzy is, he saw right through it, and, you know, how can anyone be that stupid, which is a valid question, I think.
Yeah, I think if Ozzy's available to get voted out and you don't vote him out, you've made a mistake when there are five people left.
Yeah, additionally, if you remember from Talking Teens, where I think Coach would have kept JT around, even if it wasn't in his best interest, and indeed he did, back then he was more about this whole warrior, dragons, that kind of thing. Now, though, he's shown that he's willing to place loyalty above challenge strength. If you think back to Michaela Boot, where Edna was clearly worthless in challenges, and yet, or relatively worthless at least, and yet she was kept over Michaela because she was closer to Coach. I think it's fair to say that Coach is playing to win this time.
That's exactly right. Coach has clearly come back. He's playing loyally, and he's made it very clear he's there to win. And I honestly don't know that he would even think twice about booting Ozzy and just say, there's nothing I can do. You'd probably win. Right. I want to change directions. I want to talk about Brandon Hance for a minute. There was some talk on the thread about Coach maybe being beneficial for Coach to boot Brandon at Final Seven. Do you want to go over, you know, do you see any reason why you would want to do that if you're Coach?
I think the biggest argument for it might be that, as has been pointed out, Brandon is not at all malleable. If he says he's going to do something, then he's going to stick to it. And even if you put the $1 million in front of him and say, all we have to do is break your word and you get this, he's not going to go for it. So if Coach anticipates a scenario where he has to get Brandon to vote a different way than Brandon was expecting to, then he knows he's not going to do that. So he might have to factor that into his planning.
Yeah, and that's very good. I would say, you know, for the exact same reasons, I don't think I want to deal with Brandon after I've just betrayed him, knowing that he's so high on loyalty and so willing to go with the team, and I don't know how he's going to react as a juror.
That's right. Also, we don't know what kind of promises Brandon has made and whether Coach is aware of those. So let's say Coach is imagining a scenario where he has to boot Albert later because he thinks Albert's going to beat him in the jury vote. If Brandon's made a promise to Albert that he doesn't know about, let's say the Final Four is Coach, Brandon, Albert, and somebody else, then all of a sudden Brandon is voting with Albert and potentially forcing a tie, and Coach isn't anticipating this and has to react on the fly. And situations like those where we don't know exactly what Brandon's planning is, those are scary for someone like Coach, who is otherwise in total control.
Yeah, you see, you know, famously, like, Ewell, when dealing with Jonathan Penner, was talking about, I want to keep him around because he's a very a rational player and I can kind of predict his moves. With Brandon, it's really hard to do that because he's going to act completely emotionally at all times. The other thing, I think if I'm Coach and I'm with Brandon, you know, we saw that deal they made, I think it was day one. As far as I've seen so far, Brandon's someone who's going to vote with me, he's going to stay loyal to me. They have that Christian bond about, you know, over their religion. They have that, like I mentioned, the deal on day one. As I also mentioned, you don't know how he's going to react if you betray him and he's now on a jury. I assume he's probably not going to react that well. And at the same time, if I do keep him and take him with me to the end, I don't think he's going to get a single jury vote. And I think if I'm Coach and I'm at the Final Seven and someone says, let's get Brandon, or if I'm even considering getting Brandon, I think I have to add all that up. And in order to boot Brandon, I think it would require tremendous compensation, and I don't see it.
Yeah. When Coach was considering this, he has to think about the fact that keeping Brandon around defines what combinations of goats he can take. Because, as I said, let's say he takes someone who's from the original five as well as Edgemore Cochran to the Final Four, then Brandon, who wants to keep the original five together, is going to vote out either Edgemore or Cochran. And then if the person who Coach wants to vote out is anticipating that, then that person can force a tie with Brandon and, you know, we get into a difficult situation again. So if Coach is keeping Brandon around, it has to be with the goal of keeping the original five together, and then at Final Five, using Brandon and Rick's votes to, I think, take out Albert and Sophie in whichever order he wants.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we've seen some scenes with Coach. Let's get into that for a second. The kind of diversion from the Cochran boot that we got was that Albert was not too happy with Rick, and that Albert approached Cochran saying, you know, maybe we'll turn this on Rick. We would need Coach and maybe Sophie. Cochran says, you know, Coach is willing to make a big move. He's willing to do whatever. They go and try to get Sophie, and Sophie just won't hear any of it. And what do you think about that? I guess what I'm asking is, why is Sophie so willing to kind of go along with the plan when I think she's got to at least see that Coach has Rick and Brandon probably at his disposal when they get to five?
Well, either she doesn't think that, or she thinks that she has some sort of thing going with either Brandon or Rick or whoever, where they're not going to vote her out. Or she just thinks that Coach is the same Coach as he was before. He wants to take stronger players to the end, and she thinks that she and Albert, or she and somebody else, doesn't even matter who the third person is, as long as it's her, she thinks that she's a stronger player, and the Coach is going to want to take her out of loyalty or whatever.
Yeah, so we can look ahead to the Final Six now. Cochran's gone. I guess, actually, let's first go over, you know, any final thoughts. I think the result is going to kind of put the debate about Cochran's flip to bed.
If you think for a moment about whether the Rick plan is actually something that Coach should have gone along with, I mean, what do you think about that?
The Rick plan from Coach, you know, like I said, I feel like Coach, to me, this is much more clear cut. If I'm Coach, I'm trying to take Brandon with me. I'm trying to take Rick and Edna with me. And, you know, now that Cochran's gone, I guess I'm not trying to take him anymore. But I'm trying to bring two of those three with me to the Final Three. I'm scared to death of Albert and Sophie winning out in challenges because I don't think either Brandon, Edna, or Rick could beat me in the finals. And Albert and Sophie, I think, would have a chance. And I'm trying to get them out as soon as possible. So really, by booting Rick at Final Seven, that's not really something I'm interested in because it's just one less person whose vote I have at my own disposal.
Right, it seems to me like if he's going to boot out Rick, he's doing it to keep Rockman around. So he's sacrificing one goat to keep around another goat. The problem with that is, I think that Rick is a much better goat for Coach than Cochran is, because Cochran knows that he's on the out. If he needs to turn on Coach at any point, let's say Sophie comes to him and offers him a plan, then he's going to do that if he has to. I think he beats Cochran and Rick by roughly the same margin. I think the survivor votes wouldn't go to either one of them. But with Rick, at least, he knows that Rick is going to stay loyal to him no matter what. He's going to stay loyal to the five. By keeping Rick, he doesn't have to break out that five and give people an excuse to try and turn on him. So, I don't know. I think if he wants to keep Edwin Cochran around, that's fine, but booting Rick isn't a way to do it. And if that's the only way he has to do it, then just sticking with the five is better.
Yeah, I agree. So, we had a request from Spike Forehand on the thread. Let's go ahead and look at the remaining players and assign each of them what we think their chances of winning are.
Okay. So, should we start with Coach?
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. And I'm guessing we both have Coach very high.
Yeah, he's definitely number one. The question is by what margin?
That's right. And
go ahead.
Sorry, yeah, and I'll just jump out there. I currently have Coach at 70% to win, which is a big number considering there are seven people left.
I think that's a fair assessment. And to be honest, I think most of that 30% comes from Ozzy coming back from Redemption Island and going to the final three.
That's right. Yeah, we can get to the follow-up percentages now. I think Ozzy, if he makes it out and wins out in challenges, he wins. I give him about 20% shot of doing that. Thus, I have Ozzy at 20%. I think the other 10% goes totally to Sophie. I don't think anyone else can win.
Yeah, I divide that 10% between Sophie and Albert, and I might cut into Coach's equity a bit more, give some to Ozzy, but I think that's fair. I don't think Cochran, Rick, Edwin, or Brennan can win, unless they're against each other, but as we discussed before, for that to happen, a sort of big change in their personalities would have to take place, them to be willing to set that up.
Yeah, and I guess, yeah, so that's totally fair. Suffice to say, I think we, you know, Coach, it's Coach's game to lose, and I wanted, that kind of ties in nicely to my next point. The reason we have Sophie, or at least the reason I have Sophie, is she hasn't been buried by the editors in the same way that Albert has. She's always seemed to be smart and kind of on point. And as you mentioned in the first or second episode, female winners tend to be under-edited. And as we saw with people like Natalie White or Amber Mariano, the story wasn't so much how they won, but rather how a dominant male lost. Do you now think, for Sophie to win, I think the story we'd have to have been told is how Coach lost. Do you agree with that, and do you think that's realistic? Do you think that's a possible ending for this season?
Yeah, if Sophie wins, that's going to be how. It's not going to be because she suddenly becomes this overwhelmingly positive character in the last few episodes whoever wants to root for. It's going to be because Coach takes a negative turn, or his character takes a negative turn, and the audience has to start hating him, and Sophie becomes the person who picks up his support by default. I don't think that's going to happen, though. I think this is still Coach's game to win from an editing perspective as well. A lot of the stuff that we associate with Coach as being negative is just coachisms. It's Coach being Coach. The editors like to show that because it's funny. A lot of people who watch the show like it. It's not to try and get the audience to hate Coach, because that's not what they hate him for if they do hate him.
That's exactly right. You know, we see a lot of outstanding Coach moments, and I, you know, his edit has gone from such a fantastic edit, it's at least a little bit more open-ended, and there are ways that he can lose this game. You know, bottom line, I don't think either of us sees that happening. I know I have Coach as my pick to win. I'm assuming you want to give me yours?
Yeah, around the time of the merge, which is when I think we last discussed this, we thought, or at least I thought, that it was a close race between Coach and Dawn. Now that Dawn's gone, I think Coach is the front runner by a pretty significant margin. One of the reasons I don't think that Sophie has a winner's edit yet is that she doesn't really have a story. Everything she says is very insightful, very intelligent, and I think that's why it's been shown. But it's always about other people. It's always, originally I liked Cochran, but now I don't because of this, or Brandon's going crazy again, or Albert has come up with this crazy plan that I don't like. Everything that she says is in relation to other people. We don't know anything about her, and we don't know what other people think about her. Whereas with Coach, we know what his plan is at every stage, we know what he thinks of other people, and we know what other people think of him. So if he wins, we know how and why. With Sophie, her win would be kind of out of the blue. We wouldn't expect it. We just think, okay, yeah, she's smart, we like her, but what happened here? And that's not the impression that you want the audience to have of the winner.
That's exactly right. So let's see, anything else for South Pacific to get to today?
Returning to the question of Ozzy for a minute, we both said that we think the big threat to Coach is Ozzy coming back and, you know, immunity pouring his way into the final three. if you're coach and you think that that's a danger to you, or a realistic danger, how do you cope with that? How does that affect the boot order that you've planned out in your mind?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously the boot order needs to kind of be substantially worked around, because the people I was voting off, namely, once we got down to six, would have been Albert and Sophie, just because they're my biggest competition, because they can win in the end and they can win challenges. At the same time, you have to expect Ozzy to come back off redemption, and now if and when he does, I'm left with no one who can really put up a fight against him, except maybe Brandon. And so that kind of factors in, and now Albert suddenly becomes someone I much more want to be at the to be remaining in the game when Ozzy gets re-entered, if Ozzy gets re-entered.
Yeah. If Coach thinks that the likelihood of Ozzy coming back and winning at least one challenge is high enough, then he needs to keep Albert around no matter what, because unless he takes Albert to the final five with him, or to the first final five, he votes out somebody, then Ozzy comes back. Effectively, it's going to be a competition between Albert and Ozzy for immunity. If Ozzy wins, then if you want, you can boot out Albert and you're in the same position, effectively. If Ozzy doesn't win, then obviously you can vote out Ozzy, and now you're in the final four. Again, potentially, you're in a situation where you have to fade an immunity win by somebody, but in this case, it's Albert, who is less likely to win immunity than Ozzy, and it's easier to beat in a jury vote even if he does. So, if you think Ozzy is good enough at challenges that that's a possibility, then I think he has to keep Albert and Sophie around. And that would mean sticking with the five, running out Edmund Cochran, and then going from there. Obviously, if Ozzy loses at any point, then this goes out the window, and he can start to reconsider.
So, say we get to Final Five, and it's Five Apollo before the Redemption Alley, before the Redemption Island person has come back in. It's the main five. Your coach, you know, you want to keep Albert now to deal with, to contend with Ozzy, assuming he's still the one on Redemption Island. Obviously, if someone beats Ozzy along the way, this is all going to change. But assuming you still potentially have to deal with Ozzy as a returnee, you do want to keep Albert as part of your final four. I think you also definitely want to keep Brandon. So are you going to try at the first final five? Who do you think Coach should be going after? Rick, Sophie, or Edna?
I'd go for Sophie in that spot, I think, because she's won two challenges already. That's true, but I don't think she's better enough in challenges than anybody else to justify keeping her, especially given that she's much more likely to pick up a few jury votes than Brandon or Edna or whoever.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I agree. I think Sophie, you know, while she's been good at challenges and could maybe give Ozzy a run for his money, I think the challenges she's done well in, he would destroy her at.
Right, if you think about it, the first one was the challenge where they had to run through an obstacle course, collect the coconut juice, and then spit it into a bowl. And that's not the sort of challenge that you're going to have in the end game. So the fact that she's good at that doesn't really matter. And then the other challenge was the survival trivia quiz at Tribal Council. Again, that's not going to come into play again. So the fact that she did well is that it, you know, doesn't really matter at all. Ozzy is going to be a massive favourite in over someone like Sophie. And the challenges that Sophie's going to be good at aren't the ones that we're going to face at the end. Potentially, if it's something like a balance challenge that women tend to win, you might want to keep Sophie around. But otherwise, I think Ozzy's going to win that anyway. And so I think the argument still holds for booting Sophie.
Yeah, if you remember the final immunity challenge back in Ozzy's first season of Cook Islands was the one where they all stood up on a perch and gradually dropped pieces off, and it was completely just balance, and he stood on a perch the size of, like, half of a postcard for 2 hours or something, and eventually he ultimately did beat two women in that challenge. All right, so what we're going to do next is we're going to look back at some of the final seven situations throughout Survivor history from the past 22 seasons and go over some of the more interesting and famous spots. We're going to touch on all of them, but we're going to be going over some of them more in-depth than others, and we're going to go reverse chronologically, which means we're going to start with season 22. Dom, you want to get into that?
Yeah, this isn't one of the interesting ones, I'm afraid. So final seven here, we have former Omen Survivor tribe, so Rob, Grant, Andrea, Ashley, Natalie and Philip, and then Steve is the last remaining Zapatero member. And I think it's pretty clear at this point that the correct play for everybody who isn't Rob is to vote out Rob. But thanks to the powers of mind control, it seems like that was never realistically going to happen. And this is something we're going to see again in another Rob seasons in All-Stars, where, again, he's clearly the biggest threat left in the game, but we know from watching it that none of them seriously entertained the thought of voting him out at any point.
Yeah, when I was going through all these old seasons, making my notes for each of these final seven, the only note I have for this season is just Rob was running a cult. There was nothing Steve could do. It was already over. So, 22, not much interesting, I guess. Anyway, you good to move on to season 21, Nicaragua?
Yeah, I think it's useful to note, though, that when we talk about this not being a very interesting spot, if we want to look at why that is, sort of from a theoretical perspective, this is one of the seasons where you have a main alliance and then the last sole survivor from the other alliance. And sometimes the situations can be interesting. We're going to take a look at some of those later. But often the expected happens. The last person goes, and then whereas at the top of the majority alliance just ends up winning the game fairly easily.
Yeah, that we'll definitely see that a few more times. You know, Bossarov's a great player. That he's going to do that a lot of the time that he plays. So let's season 21.
And arguably, we're seeing that this season with Coach as well. Obviously, we don't know the results yet, but it looks like that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's a very apt comparison. That's definitely what it looks like. Season 21, so we get down. This is an interesting split because we have seven people left. The way we get into the final seven is the night before we had nine. And the final seven happened when Purple Kelly and America's sweetheart, Nayanka, both quit the game with nine left. So now it kind of leaves Sash out to dry. He becomes the swing vote. And this is actually kind of interesting because the groupings kind of seem to be, instead of 6-1, it's like 3-3-1, the three being Chase, Holly, Jane, Dan, Benry, and Fabio, and then Sash kind of out on his own.
Right, and this is a fairly unique structure in the sense that we hadn't really seen it before, and the only way in which it eventually happened was because two people randomly quit the game. If that hadn't happened, kind of interesting to think about what might have happened instead. So let's say Nyonka and Kelly stay in. They're close to Sash, and Sash is still in with this big group, which includes Holly, Jane, and Chase. So let's say Benry and Fabio go next, which I think would have happened. So then we have Dan from that group, who's still there, and then this big majority alliance of six. And at that point, I think Sash knows that he needs to make a move because Chase has an idol. You know, he's still one of the big threats in the game. And Holly and Jane are this fairly close pair, and both of them would be fairly difficult to beat in a jury vote. So at that point, I think he tries to make something happen with Dan, maybe. Try to switch up the game that way, and we get into a fairly standard final seven spot where one the bottom of one alliance jumps over and tries to vote out the former majority.
Yeah, and it's kind of an interesting spot because if they didn't quit and we got down to final seven with those seven, Sash would be in kind of a decent position because he could, you know, Nayanka's never going to get a jury vote against anyone. Purple Kelly's probably not going to get a lot of votes, so if he can get there with those two, he can win. When they quit, and the reason we're not going to spend a ton of time on this spot is because when they quit, they also kind of, Sash can now basically no longer win because the two people he could have beaten in the finals are now gone, and he also has not many people to work with in terms of getting to the finals.
Exactly. He's still in a fine position because he's a swing vote, but he's just as likely to make the final three, but once he gets there, it's a lot less likely that he wins. I think the only combination that he might have a chance of winning is Jane and Dan, I guess, because Jane was a lot less popular on the show than he was shown that she was. But even that, I don't think... Firstly, I don't think it's realistic. And secondly, I'm not convinced that Sash actually does win that, if that happens. So...
I agree.
And that's one of the reasons we're not going to focus on this season that much, because the person who has to make the decision, who is Sash, basically can't win the game anyway, so his decision is kind of irrelevant.
Oh, and I once again forgot to mention the actual result is that Benry went. He, you know, the biggest physical threat by far to besides Chase and Sash, the biggest threat to those two, and they were kind of the ones, not Sash in particular, but Chase kind of making the decisions.
Right, and I think that was the right move for Sash given the circumstances he was in, but again, I don't really think it was all that important.
Yeah, he's going to have a really hard time winning anyway. So are we good to move on to what I think a lot of people consider the Rolls Royce of seasons, Heroes versus Villains?
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so coming into Heroes versus Villains, we now have, and you'll hear us reference these numbers quite often, in terms of when we're breaking down the seven people left, we're going to give you numbers that kind of add up to seven in terms of how the votes have kind of been blocked out before. And so this entering this, we have a 5-2, which is to say we went into the merge 5-5, and we're in the process of a pagonging of the heroes. And so it's five villains, Russell, Parvati, Danielle, Jerry, and Sandra, against the two remaining heroes, Rupert and Colby. Now, at Final 8, we lost Candace after she flipped at Final 9. And if you'll allow it, briefly get into that, because that boot seemed weird to me after she's just flipped. If you want to get into that a little bit, was that the right move, the wrong move, for the people in charge, Russell and Parvati?
I think it was a bad move for Russell, in particular, because he couldn't win anymore, or at least he didn't have outs to win anymore. I think it was bad for Parvati as well, because she reduced her outs, now she has to make Final 3 with exactly Russell and Danielle, and that's obviously more difficult to set up than it is if she has an extra goat in the form of Candace. It was fine, however, for someone like Jerry, who was one of the main instigators behind that book, because now now Russell can't take Danielle to the end of the set. He has to take people like Jerry, because he can't take heroes, he can't take Sandra, and he seems not to want to take Barfly, so Jerry's sitting pretty after that happens.
Yeah, and that's, you know, a concept we'll be getting back into later is eliminating, it's a very important concept, eliminating the people that the other people would take in front of you, and to get yourself as the person being taken, rather than having to win out and take someone yourself. So anyway, I believe this is the spot where at Final Seven, Rupert pulls out a rock in attempt to convince Russell that he has a hidden immunity idol. He goes and finds a rock, puts it in his pocket, and Russell bites. Am I in fact correct that this was this episode?
I believe so. A rare display of potential intelligence from Rupert, but
absolutely.
A very hilarious one. Ends up actually convincing Russell that this is the case, and hilarity ensues.
It sure does. You know, hilarity for some people. Now, something Russell really needs to be considering, the way the game is shaping up, Parvati and Danielle are becoming a really powerful pair that he's going to have to deal with eventually, because they're always going to be loyal to each other ahead of him. So what he does at Final Seven is he tries to pit them against each other. He tells each of them, he tells Danielle that Parvati wanted her out, he tells Danielle that, he tells Parvati that Danielle wants her out, and vice versa. I don't know if I said the same one twice, I'm sorry. So my first question, I guess, accepting the fact, I assume you acknowledge that these guys are a very powerful pair, Parvati and Danielle. Do you think Final Seven is roughly the right time, at least, to worry about splitting them up?
I think so. You know that you can boot the heroes whenever you want, because everybody realizes that if a hero makes it to the end, they win. So you can always hold that threat over the other people's head. You can say, well, we can't let these people go further, because what if they win immunity? You know, what happens then? So the heroes are always locked in as potential boots, whereas if Parvati and Danielle float through, eventually their status as a pair is going to make them very powerful. So I think it's the right time to split it up. As it happens, Russell goes for Danielle, strangely, instead of Parvati, which is just inexplicable to me. But I think the principle of splitting that pair is correct.
Okay, yeah, and that's, it looks like either hero is going to win no matter who they're sitting against, if were they to make it, Colby or Rupert, because there are already three heroes on the jury that are going to vote for them, and there are probably going to be some bitter villains on the jury that'll vote for whatever hero makes it. So on one hand you have, you know, Danielle and Parvati are becoming an increasing priority, because that pair gets more and more dangerous as fewer and fewer people are left. But at the same time, Russell can beat Danielle. He certainly can't beat any of the heroes. So shouldn't be one of the, because Russell is the one who called this audible. He told the heroes at Final Seven, you know, we're going to go Danielle. And then he, at Tribal Council, Danielle kind of antagonized him, maybe. He started berating her. She broke down in tears. He kind of called an audible and told Jerry at Tribal Council, we're going to vote for Danielle. I don't know whether or not that was already the plan going in. The cameras kind of make it look like it wasn't a plan. So anyway, how do you stack that priority up in terms of getting this pair out versus making sure these heroes don't get it to the end?
Well, I think this is another season where it's less interesting than it might be, because the person making the decision, Russell, is just unable to win anyway. If he was someone with maybe Parvati status, where he has outs but not very many, it would become a lot more interesting, I think, because then his decisions actually have an impact on the game. As it is, even, he gets zero votes in pretty much any scenario, I think.
Yeah, and for that same reason, it's important to note, I think, that at this point in the game, I think everyone knew Russell was never going to get any votes, and it looks, while it may look like he's dominating and preventing himself from being voted out, it's rarely correct to vote Russell Hans out when you can conceivably drag him along to the end. My point there was that Russell at this point has a lot of room to maneuver, because I think even he, though he wouldn't admit it, knew that he couldn't win at this point.
Right. And that's what I think makes it more useful to look at it from the perspectives of other people who do have a chance to win, namely people like Parvati, or in particular Jerry and Sandra, who I think this boot is more beneficial for than anybody else, even though Sandra randomly didn't seem to think so. Right. Well, if we look at it from Sandra's perspective, it's good for her to have these heroes in the game, because if you think about it, if she thinks about how other people think, you might think, well, Sandra's going to win a jury vote, and the heroes are going to win a jury vote. So from that perspective, they're equal. But Sandra's not going to win any challenges, whereas the heroes might. So if we vote off a hero soon, we can drag Sandra along and then kick her out whenever. So if she keeps the heroes in the game, that whole boot list shifts one place back. So let's say they vote out a hero, then they vote out the other hero, then they vote out Sandra, that final five. That's not very good for her. But if she can move that back, suddenly she's in the final four, and she only needs one thing to go wrong for somebody, and suddenly she's in the final three with a good shot at winning.
That's very true, because, you know, like we mentioned before, it becomes a point where if you're Sandra and you get to the final four with two other villains and a hero, those villains don't have a choice but to take you, assuming the hero does not win immunity, because that hero is going to blow them out of the jury.
Exactly, and that's why I think Sandra punted in the next round, at final six, where she didn't really use her idol in conjunction with the heroes to take out a villain, because it's clearly in the hero's interest to work with her at that point, and it's clearly in her interest to work with the heroes, so it seems like that would have been the natural thing to do, because then at final five, she can flip back, they have to take out the heroes, so all she needs to do is make sure the other hero doesn't win at final four, and she's a millionaire again.
That's right, and you know, you're not dealing with Rupert, who put up 240 pounds on his shoulders, and Colby, who won however many challenges in a row in Australia. It's been 10 years. These guys are aging, and they're, you know, Russell and Parvati are both can definitely hold their own in challenges. So, and you know, Danielle to a certain extent, and even Jerry.
For sure, yeah.
All right. So, anything else for Heroes versus Villains?
I don't think so. We can move on to Samoa if you like.
Sure, and Samoa was another one. Samoa, we come in, it's 5-2 effectively because Shambo's joined forces with Foa Foa. What ultimately ends up happening is Monica gets the boot. The breakdown is you have Foa Foa, which was Russell Hans, who we just talked about, Natalie, Mick, Jason. Shambo is clearly joined up with them. And then you have Brett and Monica as the last two remaining Galoo. And this, again, was pretty straightforward. Galoo is going to crush any jury vote because the entire jury is going to Galoo thus far. They need to get the Galoos out, and neither of them's bad. Neither of them's useless in challenges by any means. They're both capable players. Any other way you could have seen this going?
Well, this season is kind of illustrates a general principle, which is if you have a five-person alliance, if you think that there's a majority of three within that alliance, then the people who aren't in that majority might have an incentive to flip over, join up with the two outsiders, and vote out one of the three because they think that if they leave it too long, then they're not going to be able to get anything together later.
Yeah.
In this case, I don't think that's necessarily true, because you think, well, there's no clearly defined outsiders in that group, because Russell is delusional about his own chances of winning a jury vote. He's going to vote out Shambo over people like Anthony and Nick, which is just... I don't understand at all.
It's lunacy. Shambo's one of the few people in Survivor history he could maybe have a chance against in a final tribal council.
If you're
the way he plays.
If you're setting up your ideal Final Tribal Council and you get to pick anybody from Survivor history to go up against, you'd probably want to pick somebody like Shambo or Dream or whatever. Somebody like that.
Shambo, James, Nayaka, anyone like that where they're just... I think Brandon Hans is someone you also want to be up against. Any member of the Hans family, probably Russell's wife, I don't know.
Right, and what that means is that people like Natalie or Mick or Jason don't really have an incentive to flip because they might think that Russell's just going to take them far in the game anyway and they can maneuver... You know, later down the road.
Yeah, so, you know, again, nothing particularly special about Samoa for this final seven. Fairly straightforward. Anything else to add?
The numbers are the same. You have a 5-2 majority, but because of the alliance structure within that five, people don't have an incentive to flip, and therefore the actual episode that corresponds to that tribal council is, you know, fairly formulaic.
Yeah, and now, so let's move on to Token Sheens.
Sure.
And in Token Sheens, we come in with 4-3... in terms of original starting tribes, but 4-3 in a different direction in terms of who's in power. Because you have the three original Jalapau, JT, Steven, and Taj, who is obviously two of the three are some of the best players ever. And then you have Aaron, you have the four Timbira, Aaron, Coach, Debbie, and Sierra. But none of those four seem to get along all that well. No combination of any two of the four seems to get along that well. And the entire idea of going 4-3 and turning the tables back on Jalapau seems like something no one even considered. Why do you think that is?
Well, you've seen already that Timbira is just completely dysfunctional. Voting out Brendan first, then voting out Tyson. In theory, if you're in Coach's position, those moves are perfectly fine, even though Coach wasn't in on the Tyson boot. Because if Timbira can regroup at Final 7, they can vote out the Jalapaus, they become the Final 4, and then Coach and Debbie, both of them have a good shot at winning. As it happens, though, Coach, at least not back then, was not some genius with a master plan, and he basically punts any chance he had by voting out Sierra.
Yeah, you know, Sierra and Coach dating all the way back to the very beginning on Timbira, did not see eye to eye. Coach didn't respect her as a player or as a competitor, and that was about it. You know, he wanted, this is Coach 1.0. He wanted to get to the end with Warriors. Steel sharpens steel, thus JT, who better to go with, when in reality, obviously, JT probably the worst one to go with, and one of the worst ones to take to the end in Survivor history, because he's that good. You know, this is just another example of, there wasn't much else that was going to happen. You know, I suppose Sierra seems like an interesting boot to me when you're in that situation, because I guess if you're a Jalapau, it doesn't matter that much, because your goal isn't really to get to the end with Sierra, it's to get to the end with someone else. What do you think about Sierra as a boot, and who, if not Sierra, who else do you think maybe could have gone?
So, I think the Sierra boot might be better for Steven than it is for JT or Tosh, because all of Timbira basically is in love with JT. They don't want to vote him off. That includes Sierra, it includes Coach, it includes Debbie. But at least Sierra probably isn't going to win immunity, but it's likely that Coach or Debbie might win immunity at some point, which gives Steven an opening to vote out JT if he wants to.
Good point. Excellent point. You know, as far as Final 7, I'm sure we'll talk about Season 18 in more depth in the future. As far as Final 7 go, I think that's about all we need to talk about for Token Genes.
Right. Final 7 typically is a spot where either a big power player in the game is blindsided, or it's pretty formulaic, and the person you expected to go goes. And this is one of the last cases where it's not, nothing particularly exciting happens. Sierra goes, no fanfare, and we move on to Final 6.
Now, I want to talk about JT for a minute with regard to Steven. JT, in my opinion, is a special kind of Survivor player. And I think Steven, at the same time, is aware enough and also a very, very good Survivor player to recognize that. The reason I say that about JT is because I think any time he gets to the finals, he's going to win. People just seem to instantly fall in love with him. And we saw that with on Token Change. We saw that with Brendan. We saw that with Coach. We saw that with Debbie. So I guess the question is, Steven should recognize, and I assume did recognize, that at some point he needs to deal with JT. Obviously, we didn't see that happening. But is Final 7 a spot where you think that could have happened? Do you think Steven missed an opportunity?
Well, if Steven's thinking about it, he might think that it's one of the last spots where he might have a chance to take out JT, just because JT's clearly the biggest physical threat left. He can win most of the remaining immunities. So if he wants to take JT out, it has to be relatively soon. If he's not going to do it, maybe with a lucky win at Final 3. The problem with doing it at Final 7 is that, firstly, everyone else expects Sierra to go. So he has to use Taj's idol in order to accomplish that. Which not only obviously pisses off Taj, but it also pisses off all the people who expected Sierra to go. So Coach and Debbie, namely. Erin probably still sides with him, but if he does this, then Coach and Debbie might be able to scoop up Taj to turn against Steven, which would obviously be catastrophic for him.
Yeah, that, of course he doesn't want that. And I think JT was also benefited from circumstance, much like I would say like Ozzy in Cook Islands, where clearly people recognized him as the biggest physical threat and certainly a jury threat. Probably Ozzy not so much of a jury threat as JT. But at the same time, even people within his own alliance who would want him gone to improve their own game and their own shot at winning, at the same time, you're still, at this point, down 3-4 in terms of original tribes, and you kind of need, any Timbira going certainly improves your position. So to make a move like this, you're sacrificing someone who certainly would have voted with you for a long time. Granted, they're a big threat, but you still kind of need their vote as a number, it would seem, at least.
Right. So Stephen made what you might call a safe play, but I think it's the right one, ultimately. And just sticking with the plan, voting out Sierra, and hoping to take out JT when he didn't win immunity, maybe Final 4 or Final 3, which was the last point at which Steven had a realistic shot of taking him out. So, obviously, JT is a good player, played a great game in Token Teams, I think. But, you know, Steven was unlucky in that he didn't have the chance to try and get something together against JT.
Yeah, I agree. All right, good on Token Teams. Let's move on to Survivor Gabon.
Okay.
This is season 17, and entering this season, this is another 5-2 situation, and what ultimately happens is Corinne goes. For those of you who want to try to think back to this episode, we're in the process of begonging. Coda's been picked off one by one. Anyway, an alliance of five that's been kind of a powerhouse since the merge. Kenny, kind of masterminding it. Crystal, Maddie winning the some challenges, being the physical presence in there. Sugar and Susie are up against Bob, Maine's own Bob, and Corinne. And now this is the spot where, like I mentioned, this is where we see Bob's second fake hidden immunity idol, which he was obviously very impressive at making. The first one he gave to Randy. I still don't even understand why he did that, knowing that it wasn't real, getting Randy to play it. Embarrassing Randy and delighting Sugar and Crystal. So Kenny's been kind of masterminding this whole season. And what happens is Kenny's now in an interesting position because with seven left, Bob approaches him with yet another really convincing looking hidden immunity idol. And Bob pitches it. For those of you who remember the Merge episode, they all had a feast. The group together found the hidden immunity idol and threw it into the ocean. Bob now at Final Seven says, well, Marcus, the one who threw it to the ocean, didn't really throw it to the into the ocean. We still have it. Vote with us, take out Maddie, take out this threat, and join with us. So Kenny's now in an interesting position, because certainly taking out Maddie removes a big piece of the challenge threats, and certainly someone who could win. And at the same time, he also has four other people that he kind of needs to stay true to, that he's been staying true to the whole time. But if Bob's fake idol is in fact real, which Kenny doesn't know, and Bob then can idol out whoever he wants, by voting with Bob and Corinne, when Bob or Corinne in this case, because Bob had the regular immunity necklace, if Corinne plays a real idol, Kenny now has gained tremendous favor with both Bob and Corinne moving towards the final six. What are your thoughts about what Kenny should be doing once Bob approaches him, and what are you thinking if you're Kenny in this position?
Kenny has to think. So what do I do if the idol's real, and what do I do if the idol's fake? And the conclusion that I think he should come to in both cases, and we'll explain why as we go on, is that either way he should vote with Bob and Corinne and take out Matty, rather than what he did, which was kind of sit on the fence, have Crystal vote with Bob and Corinne, have himself vote with the original Fong, which meant that not only did Corinne get voted out anyway, but he now signaled to Matty that he was after him next, which let Matty team up with Sugar to get Crystal and then Ken voted out.
That's right. I believe when he was originally approached with the fake idol, his big plan was, Crystal, they have an idol, let's join up with them and just take out Matty straight up. Just go 4-3, so even if they play the idol and it's fake, Matty would still go. And by Kenny doing what he did, which is allowing, you know, telling Crystal, okay, you still vote for Corinne, vote Corinne out, because that was their target, because Bob himself had immunity. But by Kenny saying, by Kenny having Crystal vote Corinne, and by Kenny himself voting Maddie, he, as you mentioned, really puts himself into the line of fire when it doesn't work out, which it's often not going to, it's rarely going to work out.
Right. His justification for doing that was that he was thinking down the line in terms of jury votes, maybe Bob and Corinne would be more likely to vote for him if he did make it to the end. The trouble is, though, that in any final three combination which Kenny can imagine himself being in, so against Crystal and Sugar, some combination of Crystal, Sugar, and Susie, he's going to get all of the Kota votes anyway. It isn't going to matter. They're not going to vote for Crystal out of spite just because Ken didn't vote with them on this one vote. You know, they hate the other people in his life so much that that's not going to be an issue. So he's making a very high-risk play for essentially no gain, if that was his justification. Even if we take potential idol out of the equation completely, to think about assuming that Bob wins immunity and nothing else happens, what should Ken and Crystal do? I think they should flip open vote out Matty anyway, because I don't think they have a bad play here, but let's say they vote out Matty. So the final six is Kenny and Crystal, Bob and Corinne, and then Sugar and Susie. At final six, if Bob doesn't win immunity, they can vote him out anyway with Sugar and Susie. That's going to be consensus vote, no issue there. Then Corinne and Sugar are sitting in the game, and they both hate each other completely. So even if Sugar uses her idol, Corinne is going to go. And the only way that might not happen is if Corinne wins immunity, which is fairly unlikely.
Sure.
And let's say Bob wins immunity again at final six, so they can just vote out Sugar anyway. Again, even if Sugar uses her idol, Corinne goes, both Kenny and Crystal are still in the game. Then when it gets down to five, we have Bob, Corinne, Crystal, Kenny, and Sugar, or Susie, depending on which one's left. Then the three of them can team up against Bob and Corinne. They know they have to do that because if Bob or Corinne makes it to the end, they get all of the Kota votes. So assuming Bob doesn't win both of the final two immunities, the final three is Ken, Crystal, and either Sugar or Susie, and Ken wins that in a landslide.
Ken wins all of them. Yeah, big time. And I would say this is a classic example of what we call in the poker world fancy play syndrome, which is making a big play with, you know, logical intentions, but it's not necessary. It'd be simpler just to take the easier route. I guess it's kind of like Occam's razor, which doesn't always apply. But yeah, it's basically FPS is the abbreviation for it, which you may hear us referring to in the future. So just so you know what that means.
Right. And it seemed kind of like Kenny was scared to make a play because he's willing to go along and bone out Matty if he has to. But again, he doesn't follow through with it completely. So he leaves himself in a situation where if what he wants to happen actually happens, he's not in a better position than he was before. So what he did was worse than both flipping and sticking with the original tribe. So let's consider what happens if he just sticks with the plan, boats up Corinne. So the final six is all the Fong people plus Bob. If Bob wins immunity, then Matty probably goes at this round anyway. And so the final five is essentially the same. Bob goes when he doesn't win immunity. And if he does, then you know, they vote out Susie, maybe blindside Sugar if that's possible. But even if Sugar uses her idol, then Crystal gets voted out. Ken still had two people he can beat in the form of Sugar and Susie. Then all he has to do is hope Bob doesn't win again. So whatever happens, Ken's in a good spot. The only way he can fuck it up is by doing exactly what he did.
That's exactly right. That's well put. You know, Ken, who played a very strong game for the most part, really kind of took himself out of it with this move.
Right, and you can argue that maybe he got unlucky that Sugar randomly just decided that Ken was evil and that she wanted to save Maddie. But given that you know how emotional Sugar is, you can't let that sort of thing happen, even if it's potentially unlikely.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm sure Kenny spent a lot of time thinking about that. I wish he could do it. I'm sure he wishes he could do it again. Anything else to add about Kenny or anyone else from Gabon at this point?
I don't think so. We've only really considered it from Ken's perspective, but that's because he's the one who's most likely to flip here. I don't think it makes sense for people like Sugar or Matty or whoever to try and join up with Poon and Bob here.
Yeah, I concur. So with that, we can move into fans versus favorites. You want to go ahead and talk about that one?
Right. This is one of the ones where we don't really have any frame of reference because it didn't actually happen. James is medevac this round, so the Tribal Council didn't take place. We moved directly from Final 8 to Final 6. But we can still speculate about what might have happened and what should have happened. What probably would have happened is I think James goes here anyway if Eric doesn't win immunity. If you remember, we have this female alliance in control, which is Parvati, Amanda, and Suri, and they've joined up with Natalie and Alexis from the fans. And these five have been running the game since Ozzy was booted. So the person who goes here would be a man anyway. It would be Eric or James, depending on which one of them did or didn't win immunity.
Yeah.
As to whether that should have happened, I think this is another case where it would potentially be 5-2 with a clear majority in the three, and the two on the bottom need to flip and join up with the outsiders, in this case Eric and James, because they know that, Natalie and Alexis, that is, know that Parvati, Amanda and Suri have been together since the beginning, since day one, and they want to take each other to the end, even if it might not be correct for them. They know that Suri's a jury threat, but as we saw on the show, they were willing to take it to Final 3 anyway. So Natalie and Alexis, having failed to make a move at Final 8, which is where I think they should have made it, need to make a move now at Final 7.
Yeah, and it's also worth noting that, you know, while when people think back on on Fans vs. Favorites, they include James as part of that group with Parvamin and Suri. Like in Heroes vs. Villains, there was paranoia that those four would team back up again. At this point in the game, right before James went out, he had just been burned pretty hard by them. Worth noting, at the Jason boot, James went ahead and just put a meaningless vote on Parvati just because he was angry at her, and he's not really looking to realign with these women. And as you spoke to, Natalie and Alexis have to be aware that Parvati, Amanda, and Suri are all capable players at worst, two of the three extraordinarily good players. And at the same time, they're up against James and Eric. Or not up against, but they could flip over with James and Eric, turn on those three women, and get themselves kind of a chance to win, because I don't think, I think Natalie could beat, no one's beating Suri, neither Natalie or, I don't think Alexis is beating anyone. I think maybe Natalie could beat Amanda, but I think Parvati wins out, I think Suri wins out. By flipping, you get yourself, instead of with two of three people that you can't beat in the end, you put yourself with people who can win at the end, who, you know, you're not going to win the final challenges, but they may take you, and if they do take you, you may be able to beat them.
Right. And it's worth thinking back to Final 8, because I think Natalie put herself in a very difficult spot by voting out Jason. If you remember, at the Final 8, Natalie gets a chance to send someone to exile because she wins for Raw. She chooses Jason, and Jason goes and finds the idol that was re-hidden there because Ozzy voted out with it. Then he gets back to camp and immediately just falls in love with Natalie. He's willing to do whatever she wants. He thinks that she sent him there to form some secret alliance with him, and yet she goes and votes him out anyway. Which seems ridiculous to me, because you have a guy here who's clearly a goat. No one's going to vote for him at the end. He's going to do whatever you want, And if you're trying to set up a flip later, you may as well do it now when you have that guy here, instead of voting him out and putting yourself in a difficult position. Because if you think about it, James has already been burned by Poverty, but he's not been burned by Amanda. He's not going to want to vote Amanda out. But Amanda is clearly the biggest threat from a physical perspective among the favourites at this point. So if you leave her in the game too long, which you would have to, she could go on a run. And also, Eric, whose vote you'll need at this spot in the final seven, he's going to survive until the final six, at which point he can go on a run as well, and maybe win if he makes it to the end. So she put herself in a very tricky spot where she has to fade immunity wins by two different people at various points in the game, and she's not set up well at the end if she makes it there.
Yeah, and I think this was Natalie Bolton, from what we've seen, is a big Survivor fan and clearly capable of making moves, and I think this speaks to Parvati and Saria as players. I think Natalie really just wanted them to like her and wanted to do right by them and get to the end with them and be the four really cool women that did it and took down all the guys and to be viewed as one of like the cool kids. And it's kind of like that, you know, the Will Kirby factor where everyone wants to be part of the cool kids club. And I think Natalie kind of fell victim to that because she, by taking out Jason, she sacrifices someone she could be, as you just said. And positions herself with people that aren't going to take her, and even if they did, would beat her.
Right, and it's this weird thing that you see on every season with returning players, where before the game, everyone says, oh, we'll get the returning players out as soon as possible. And in particular this season, where you have this tribalism, where it's fans versus favourites, you'd expect the fans to want to eliminate the favourites whenever they can. In reality, though, once the returning players are there, they get established very quickly. The new players fall over each other to get in good standing with the returning players, and they make sacrifices for the returning players at the expense of their own games. It's a weird thing. I'm not sure why it happens.
Yeah, I'm not sure why it happens either. But as we've seen, every season of Survivor with returning players has had at least, even when it's just two returning players against 16 or 18 new players, we've had every single time there's been a returning player, at least one of them has made the finals.
Right, and that looks to continue this season. If we
think
Coach will make it to the end, that looks like what's going to happen.
Yeah, we've assigned, you know, we started with, did we start with 18 players this season, including Coach Anazi?
Yeah.
And we're at the point where now, at least in my opinion, 90% of the time, one of those two wins the season. And they're both still the two biggest threats with this few people left, and it's just pretty remarkable.
Okay, so do you want to move on to China then?
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Okay, do you want to introduce us?
Sure, yeah. So in China, we come in with another 5-2 advantage for, one tribe. So the five that are in charge, Todd's kind of running the show. He has the aforementioned Amanda with him, Courtney Yates, James from the previous situation, and then Denise. And they come in up 5-2 into the final seven up against Eric and PG. Now, it's important to remember at this time, because of, in my opinion, the worst twist they've ever done on Survivor, which was early pre-merge, as a result of that twist, James now has not one but two hidden immunity idols in his back pocket with seven people remaining. And I think in this situation, obviously it's really tempting to vote James out. And I think the best way to approach China in terms of final seven analysis is what happens if they choose not to vote James out. Because with those two idols, James locks himself a seat in the final four. He just needs one immunity win and he basically is guaranteed the million. So where do you want to start?
Right. We can speculate about how big a jury threat James would be, but even if we assume that he's a goat, you don't want to let someone like that survive in the game with two idols. There's so many things can go wrong. If you're a player like Todd, who is able to get people to do what he wants, even then, you don't want to let a variable like that remain in the game if you have to.
That's right. Absolutely. And, you know, James, especially considering the six that he was standing next to, by far the biggest physical presence. Now, it's interesting, because if you take James out, Denise could then, if she recognizes that she's at the bottom of the three between Todd, Courtney, and Amanda, she could then join with Eric and PG potentially at final six and force a tie. So I think for each of these situations we'll approach it basically through one player's perspective, and in this case it's going to be Todd because he was the one kind of calling the shots. And by the way, if you want to hear more about Todd, this next episode that we're going to be doing is we're going to be going over the Survivor Hall of Fame. And Todd is chiefly among those as a potential new entry. And we'll be going over more of that, and we're going to be joined by special guest ESPN's Gary Wise. Get that plug out of the way. So, all of that's to say, if you're Todd, even regardless of who's immune, it doesn't make that much difference as long as it's not James, I guess.
Right. It seems like there are a few outcomes. Either James doesn't realize what's going on, doesn't use an idol, and he gets booted. Or he does realize what's going on at the last minute, uses an idol, and one of the John Who gets booted, so either Eric or PG. Or, sorry, he realizes what's about to happen, he flips over, and potentially someone like Todd goes. Now,
okay.
If I'm Todd in this perspective, I don't do what Todd actually did, which is cast his vote for James instead of PG, because if James uses an idol, I go home. Because Eric and PG know what's going to happen, and they should be voting for Todd in case of James using an idol. Now, as it happens, Eric makes that irrelevant by somehow not voting for Todd, and instead voting for James, completely randomly, thereby screwing his own ally PG if James uses an idol. So, Todd punts, and then Eric punts back. In the end, though, it doesn't end up mattering because James doesn't use an idol, gets booted. From purely game theory perspective, I don't think his move was actually that bad, because, hear me out on this, you know that there are three tribal councils left until both idols expire, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you have final seven, which is what we're discussing, final six and final five, and then after that point, idols can't be used. So if James survives through this round, he can use idols at final six, final five, get to final four. So if there's a move being made against him, it would have to be made at final seven. So that's the natural way you think about it. If, however, every player thinks on a high level, then they're going to anticipate that James thinks like that and not vote for him at final seven, force him to waste an idol, and then they can maybe set something up later at final six or final five. As it turns out, James is not some diabolical super genius, and neither are people like Courtney or Denise, so he should just play an idol every single time and guarantee a spot in the final six.
Yeah, I think if I'm James, if I have two idols, and if I'm up against the remaining six people, I'm at least moderately confident in my abilities to win one of the final six or final five challenges.
This illustrates the danger, I think, of talking about what should happen if all players are playing perfectly rationally, because in reality, most players aren't, and that needs to inform your decisions, because the irrationality of other players affects what the optimal play is for you. So we can discuss hypothetical scenarios in which James shouldn't play an idol final seven. In reality, though, he should do every single time, and it doesn't even bear thinking about. And some people who I've talked about the situation think that Denise should have flipped over with James, or maybe informed him about what was going to happen, try to set up a flip there at final seven. I'm interested to know what you think Todd should have done, because it seems to me that Amanda and Courtney should want to go to the final three with Denise, right? So if
I don't know if I agree with that. Sorry to interrupt. There was the big concern about Denise that she was going to be the sentimental jury pick, and at least Todd, there could even with someone like John Ribeiro on the jury who could potentially be mad at him. I think Todd was viewed as kind of the mastermind. Not to say Denise would have definitely won or Todd would have definitely won, but just I don't know that it's that close.
Right. But if he goes to the final four with Denise, Courtney, and Amanda, he's putting his fate in the hands of Amanda and Courtney. And we saw in the episode that they did seriously consider voting out Todd and going to the final three with Denise. If you're a player like Todd, though, you can preempt that by taking your fate into your own hands. If he either informs James of what's happening or just doesn't go through with it, flips with James over to John Who, let's say he votes out Amanda, then James trusts him implicitly because he's told him what's going on. James has an idol that he said he was willing to give to Todd. They had this agreement that they would share the idols. He's gained favour with Eric and PG in case he does make it to the end, and in case they're on the jury. And now he can argue to whoever's left, say Courtney and Denise, that they have to vote out Eric and PG because if they make it to the end, they'll win. So it seems like Todd, by flipping, set himself up in a very decent position.
But I think that's another one of those things where he can appeal to Courtney and Denise saying, we have to get rid of Eric and PG because they're going to win if they get there. But I think Denise in particular is someone who's saying, Todd kind of screwed me over. Gee, I always thought it was funny how she pronounced the word Todd. I can't do an impression of it. But, Todd screwed me over. Screw him. I'll take Eric and PG and go with good people and take my shot. Because I think Denise also thought she could win by playing up the sentimentality. And I don't think she cared really who was sitting there with her as long as she made it to the end. And so I think it's I at least hypothetically selling Denise and Courtney on rebooting Eric and PG is somewhat of a taller order than it would be against different opponents.
That's fair. But it's possible he could also sell James on booting PG and Eric as well. He wouldn't necessarily need Denise's vote in that situation. Even if teaming back up with Denise and Courtney doesn't work at that point, firstly, if he thinks that might happen, he can change the target to Denise instead of Amanda, because Amanda definitely would be willing to work with him again, because she's at least a more rational player with Denise, even if she's not a good one. And also, James is still in the game as a target at that point. So even if Denise doesn't want to boot Eric and PG, she might want to boot James, given how threatening everyone seems to agree he is.
James is still in the game as a target, but James also still has two immunity idols, and I don't think James is going to give one to Todd at his own expense, at the expense of his own game. At the same time, I'm curious what you think. You know, if it's not James at the final seven, and if you do end up going with someone like Denise, booting Denise, or either specifically Denise, I guess, in this situation, because I don't think he's going to do it with Amanda or Courtney, are you then worried about losing her as a jury vote that you may have otherwise had? Or potentially even losing future jury votes from people that are now distrustful of you, or think you're a liar?
I think it would be Amanda, although it doesn't really matter for this hypothetical, I think. Losing jury votes is something that he should be worried about, but I think he gains jury votes from Eric and PG anyway, or at least that cancels out any jury votes he might lose. And realistically, I don't think Denise is ever voting for him anyway. I don't think Courtney is ever voting against him anyway, because he wants to go to the final three with Courtney no matter what.
Yeah.
So she's not going to be in a position to be angry, and neither is Amanda.
Yeah, okay. So let's move on to season 14. And this is another one, not to spend too much time on it. This was another 6-1 where Earl, Yao Man, Dreams, Cassandra, Stacy, and Boo are left with six, and they're in the process of finishing off the Four Horsemen, who Dreams has kind of sold out, and now Alex is the last remaining of the Four Horsemen after Edgardo and Mookie have just been booted. Very straightforward. Could you see this going any other way than an Alex boot?
It reminds me a lot of Redemption Island, which we discussed before, where clearly the correct play was for the people on the bottom to team up with, in this case Alex, in that case Steve, and vote out the people at the top, so Rob in that case, Earl and the Iron Man in this one. Again, though, we know that this was never going to happen. These people were either not willing to do that, they were ignorant of their position, or they were just too loyal to entertain the thought seriously.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think we need to spend much time on that.
Okay, so moving on to season 13 now, so Cook Islands. We have the IT4, Yule, Ozzy, Becky and Sandra, joined by Jonathan Penner, and they're up against the remains of the decimated Vero tribe, who are now down to Adam and Parvati. And what happens here is Penner gets booted because Adam and Parvati go to Yule and make a deal with him to the effect that if he gets his alliance to vote out Penner now, they'll give him their jury vote so he makes it to the end. And this ends up proving pivotal because Adam honors this agreement, votes for Yule, and we have a 5-4 vote that gives Yule the $1 million, whereas Adam would have voted for Ozzy, he said, if he hadn't made that agreement.
That's right, and I think that's probably the most notable thing that came out of this Final 7, because this seemed fairly straightforward. Do you think there was any way the I-2-4 was going to crack, or any reason for any of them to?
No, I think the situation is one where no one really had anything to gain by flipping. If you're someone like Ozzy, you're going to be boosted out at the next convenient point anyway. Flipping just loses you jury votes, makes people angry at you, and I think Adam, Parvati, and Penner would have been the next victor to go anyway, no matter what, barring immunity wins. So, in the end, it was a good play by Yule, not one that really made a big difference to the season, theoretically. Obviously, it did in practice, but as a situation, it's not that interesting. So, we're moving on now to season 12, which is Survivor Exile Island, and for my money at least, this is the most interesting situation we've covered so far. And that's for a few reasons. First is because, as we saw in Fans vs. Favorites, we don't know what actually would have happened here, because there's a medevac. Bruce was taken out of the game. He's escorted out on a stretcher by a naked Shane, which was one of the most funny of that season.
That's right.
And so we don't know what actually would have happened there. Also because Terry, who's on the outside of the 6-1 split, we have Terry from the former Lamina tribe, who's allies are being pogonged one by one against Bruce, who got medevaced, Aris, Suri, Danielle, Shane, and Courtney. Terry has the Hidden Immunity Idol, and this isn't just any Hidden Immunity Idol. This is back when the producers were still trying to figure out, you know, how the idol should be played, what the optimal rules would be. This was the God Mode idol. It could be played after both were red, so you wouldn't have to think about when it could be used. If you received the majority of votes and you had it, you'd just whip it out, play it, and you'd be safe. You didn't have to think about it at all. It's like playing Survivor with cheat codes on. You simply... And what this meant was that even if Terry lost immunity at any point, it would be very difficult to get him out of the game because of this idol. So everybody on Kasaya had to think about how they positioned themselves for an endgame that included Terry, because he was almost guaranteed to be there.
Yeah, and just real briefly, for those of you who don't remember Terry Deets, you know, to get at the person with this God Mode idol requires them losing an immunity challenge, and Terry Deets was not big on losing immunity challenges, so when he has the necklace every time, you don't even get opportunities to flush out this mega idol.
Right, and the thing about flushing out the mega idol, as you call it, is that the traditional idol, you can flush it out pretty much whenever you want, because if that person isn't aware that they're being voted for that night, then they're gone, the idol's out of play permanently. With this idol, though, if the person who, since the person who gets it can play it no matter what, when they receive votes, you need to be able to set up the second most number of votes such that the person you want will be voted out on the bounce back from the idol, if that makes sense.
That's right, yeah, you got to be able to get the majority of votes on the person with the idol, and then enough votes to get a majority, not including those, on your second target.
Right, and as the game goes on, and there are a few people in the game, that becomes a lot more difficult. So, even if Terry doesn't win immunity, it might not be correct for people to vote for him, just because he can effectively take out whoever he wants with his idol.
Yeah, and it's also worth noting that in this season, one thing's been brewing for a long time, and one thing's just recently happened. The first being Shane, RS, Courtney, and Danielle. Very early on, they were in four tribes to start. They merged into two tribes very quickly. And Shane sat off, just grabbed those three other people, RS, Courtney, and Danielle, and said, "This is it. This is the four. I'm swearing on my kid. I'm not going to turn on you. Don't turn on me. Let's just run this thing to the end and let's see how it goes." And then and that was very early on in the game. And at this point, it's much further into the game, and those four really cannot stand each other. And unfortunately for all of those four involved, still remaining in the game is, for my money, maybe the best, one of the best players ever. Certainly the best at taking advantage of such a situation, and that's Ceree Fields.
Right.
And she ends up playing a very integral part.
Right. And she is a potential Hall of Fame candidate in my mind, and we'll get to that on
later
podcast. Ceree recognizes that she needs, that if you can't get Terry out of the game, she needs to get out of the game for people that Terry wants to take with him to the final two. And she does that in a later round by running out Courtney in a fairly masterful play, I think. But it's interesting to think about what she should have done this round as well, because given her skills at manipulating people, she probably has effective control of this vote.
I would agree, especially given there's an interesting dynamic going around camp. You know, normally they don't care for each other, but they'll get along and vote together. They've just come back from the reward challenge, wherein everyone fills out a survey where they pick the superlatives for throughout the tribe, like the most athletic, like the biggest challenge threat, who thinks they're in control of the game, but they're not. And at this challenge, Courtney basically scooped all of the negative categories, like most annoying, least likely to win, doesn't deserve to be here, whatever.
Right, she's popular for all the wrong reasons. And so coming out of this, the people who are ostensibly in an alliance hate each other, they can't wait to vote each other out, and this is aided by the fact that Terry and Ceree hold all the power at this point. They can get these people and get them to turn each other in whatever fashion they choose.
That's right, and it's also definitely worth noting, I know I touched on it once, Terry is a beast at challenges on the same level as Ozzy. He's not someone who's just athletic. He's not, it's not like there are certain things where he's drawing dead. He's going to give it his all, and he's probably going to win pretty much every challenge. And apart from Aris, there's really not anyone there that can compete with him. And so that has to factor into things too, because given this idol and given that if Aris goes, Terry's not going to lose a challenge. It's going to be really difficult. So for this season, I think it's fair to approach this from Ceree's perspective. So given all of that, ultimately, what obviously we see Bruce gets medevaced and we don't get to see any of this play out, but were we to get to see this play out, what do you think, if you're Ceree, what are you trying to accomplish at Final 7 here? Because this is a big time for you.
Right. Ceree has to be thinking long term here. Obviously, she wants to get to the Final 2, and to get there, she has to be in the Final 3. The problem is that, for reasons we've already discussed, Terry's probably going to be there as well. So, and Terry is in all likelihood going to win the final immunity challenge, and given how popular Ceree is, he's not going to want to take Ceree to the end. So she has to try and engineer a Final 3 in which Terry has an incentive to take her. And it seems to me that the only way she can do that is to take the next biggest jury threat in the form of Aris.
Aris, right.
So she's trying to set up this Final 3 of Terry, Ceree, and Aris. But her problem is that Terry wants Aris out of the game, and understandably so that he doesn't have any competition for the challenges. He can just bulldoze through them, make it to the final two, and win. So, Siri had to think about not only what's best for her, but how she can keep Ara safe from getting idled by Terry.
Yeah, and this is a season where it's very interesting because who wins immunity, and I'm sure we'll talk about the Exile Island season 12 much more in depth in the future, but because Terry and Aris are just so many levels above everyone else in terms of ability to win challenges, it really becomes important if exactly, with Terry having the idol in his back pocket and exactly Aris winning immunity, now they're the disaster situation, not disaster for Siri necessarily, but disaster for the other people in terms of these two guys are both definitely going to be here. They're both definitely going to be picking people off. Who do you think that's beneficial to? I would say Siri in terms of keeping both of them around for reasons you just went over. But if you're someone like Shane or even Danielle, is basically the bottom line question is, are these other people looking to make a move on Aris soon?
I think the people who we would call GOATs, so Courtney, Shane, Bruce, and Danielle, should be looking to get rid of Aris. Let's say you keep him in. The only reason it seems that you'd want to do that is so that he can compete with Terry. But let's say he does that, he wins immunity, you manage to get Terry out of the game somehow, you flush out his idol, then you vote for him again later, and he's out of the game. The problem is that now you're in the same situation you are before, in that the biggest jury threat is also the biggest challenge threat, except now it's Aris, and he has no competition whatsoever, and he can just run through the remaining challenges to make it to the end.
Yeah, that's fair. So, to speak more to the point, it makes it very interesting for these other players, because all of these factors combined, I know Dom mentioned in the beginning, this may be his favorite, this also may be my favorite, because there are so many different variables that go into making a perfect move here. And it's unfortunate, I think, that we didn't get to see what ultimately would have happened. But knowing Bruce leaves, do you think Bruce ever goes at Final 7? Do you think he's likely to go ever, given that he's kind of on the outside of the Kasaya tribe? So do you think they kind of try to stay strong, or do they try to do something else?
I actually think there is a high chance that Bruce goes to Final 7 anyway, because, if we're looking at it through Siri's eyes, assuming that she can control the vote, she wants to get all the goats out of the game that Terry might want to bring with him. But there are so many of these goats, Bruce, Courtney, Shane, Danielle, that she has to stop right now if she's going to do that, because the only other people in the game are herself, Terry, and Aris.
Right.
So she needs to get a goat out of the game somehow, or she needs to get one goat out of the game, and she wants to get out of the game a goat who's most likely to align with Terry, and that's Shane or Bruce, and seems like she may as well get rid of Bruce.
Yeah, that's fair. That's definitely fair. So, we ultimately could see, even if Bruce hadn't been medevaced, we could, what ended up happening in Exile Island could have been what ended up happening anyway.
Right, and Ceri's the only person in whose interest it is to keep Arvs around, I think, because Siri, even if she doesn't definitely beat Arvs, at least stands a good chance of doing that. Whereas people like Courtney doesn't want to take Arvs to the end because Arvs would beat her. Same with the thing with Danielle, Shane, and Bruce. So Siri's interests are against the interests of everyone else in the tribe at this point, which makes things harder for her in some sense.
Well, yeah, I agree. But it makes it easier for her because she's one of the best ever at manipulating people, especially the people she was left with. But yeah, in a vacuum, certainly, if she's dealing with better, higher-thinking players.
And if you're one of those goats, you might think, if you're assuming you can't win the million anyway, and you want to play for second place, you might want to set up a final three, which is like Terry, yourself, and Siri, because Terry's probably going to win the challenge, and he can't take Siri, so he has to take you, and you lock up the 100K.
Yeah.
If you're playing to win, however, which we both think you should be, the best thing you can do is take two goats to the final three, so yourself, somebody else, and Terry, and just hope that Terry doesn't win. That's all you can hope to do at that point. As unlikely as it is, you have to hope that one of you beats the last challenge.
Yeah, that's all there is to it. Honestly, in that season, Terry, given how just dominant he was in the challenges and with that idol, you have to anticipate Terry being there at the end. And I fully agree. I think for anyone but Siri, they need to be Shane, Courtney, and Danielle, and Bruce specifically, need to be taking each other to the finals to the final four with Terry.
Right. So correct. So let's think about what would happen if Terry had won immunity for this round. So let's say Aris wins immunity instead. This is pretty disastrous for everyone else involved because you can't vote out Terry because of the idol, and you can't vote out Aris. So what do you do now, do you think?
Well, it's interesting. My first thought is there any way to put enough votes on Terry to at least flush the idol? And it doesn't – I don't know if there are, because the thing is, I think at this point, I may be trying to get rid of Shane, honestly, because, first of all, I don't think he can hang with Terry and Aris, so he's not really a value there in terms of beating him at challenges. You know, the argument can be made that he's not going to win a jury, which I think is totally a fair argument, and I think the same argument can be made against the other people. We've established that I think if this is if Aris wins immunity.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, yeah, I just wanted to make sure. We've established that the other people can't beat Terry, Aris, or Ceree, I think. So either, if I'm Courtney Danielle, I may be looking at Shane. Honestly, a Ceree boot, Fred, and this is, all this is speaking in terms of, as one of those three goats, Shane, Aris, Courtney, and then I suppose Bruce, so four. I think Ceree, I'm looking hard at Ceree, even though she's not gonna win any challenges. She's so nice and such a jury, Fred, that I think there's justification to take her out. You know, you didn't swear on your son's life on her if you're Shane, to her if you're Shane. And while you may not like your own alliance, at least I think those four, Ceree's obviously never going to beat Terry at anything, nor is Bruce. I think those four, as much as they all may dislike it, may honestly be best off going with each other, given that Aris wins immunity. And with the exception of maybe Aris wanting to keep Ceree, I think there's enough to get a Ceree boot at Final 7.
That's certainly possible. The only problem with that is that now you have Terry in the final six with the idol and Aris. So even if you, because let's say Terry wins immunity at final six, or even if he doesn't, then Aris has to stay in the game as well because he knows that Terry wants to idol him out. So he's going to try and set up something involving booting someone like, you know, Danielle or Shane or someone who isn't him. And given that he's running around trying to get votes to do that, it becomes difficult to get enough votes on Terry so that Aris goes instead of, you know, one of the goats.
Yeah, and just to, you know, I think Aris is very, you know, not super memorable as a winner or as a character, but I think, you know, to play that entire, Aris obviously goes on to win the whole game. To play that whole game with seven left, knowing that everyone wants you gone, particularly the guy who, if everyone puts their votes on him, who has the idol, he's always going to be idling you out so he can just destroy people and get to the finals and win. And I think for Aris to play the whole game with that knowledge, and, you know, he brought it up a lot when he said, you know, this challenge may not matter to you, but it matters to me because if Terry wins, I'm the one who goes home. It doesn't matter to you, speaking to the other people. And I think Aris deserves, you know, a bit more credit than most winners, where he was the guy with the idol who had, at the time, so much power, who always would have taken him out given the opportunity, and to survive through all that's pretty impressive to me.
Yeah, I agree. The last scenario we might consider is, what happens if neither Terry nor Aris wins immunity at Final 7? So, for sake of argument, let's say Danielle wins.
Does that ever happen, first of all? But yeah, continue.
It's probably less than 5% of the time, but humor me for a moment.
Sure.
So, let's say Danielle wins immunity. Could be anybody, but let's say Danielle.
Sure.
So now, you want to put lots of votes on Terry, because you know that he's going to idle out Aris every single time if he can. Of course, Aris himself knows this. So, if you're Aris, what's your counterplay here?
I think at this point he'd had a good relationship with Ceree. Really get in with Ceree and try to get her to change things with everyone else. Because it's not looking good for you if Aris, if I'm Aris at Final 7 and I don't win immunity, and I, you know, barring a medevac or whatever, I think no matter who does, even including Terry, the plan is to get to Ceree, assuming I'm not trying to boot her, which I don't think Aris specifically would be. I think the other three might. But I think Ceree is someone where I think you have a decent relationship. You can trust her, at least to a certain extent. I don't know that you can trust her to take you to the end against someone that would be more easy to beat, but I think for now she also recognizes that she needs to get one of these other goats out or else her game's going to be really difficult to win. And I think that would probably be the course of action I would take. And probably Danielle. I think Aris and Danielle probably had the closest relationship out of any of the four.
Yeah.
Kasaya at the core. So with Ceree, Danielle, and then I guess go for Bruce and try to get Shane out or Courtney and just use whatever, you know, bullshit line about how they're bringing down the camp vibe or whatever. But I'm grasping at straws, honestly.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I think we're both thankful that the idol rules have changed now and that it can't be played after the vote. But
definitely.
So here specifically, it created a very interesting scenario that maybe wouldn't have come up if the idol was just the post-VG rules idol.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's interesting for that reason, but I'm glad, like you said, we're glad they changed it, because that was just way, no one man should have all that power, as the great Kanye West once said.
Right. So, if we look at the two seasons where this idol was in play, Terry gets it in this season and goes to the final three, Yule gets it in the next season and just wins the game pretty much effortlessly.
Yeah.
So, if this had stayed on, I think we would have seen a few more seasons like that, where somebody picks up early and just runs the table.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Anything else for Panama, Exile Island?
That covers it for me.
All right, so let's move on to, let's see, 11, Guatemala. So we come in, this is a great example of a 5-2 situation where a pogonging's taken place. New Nakum, who is Steph, Rafe, Judd, Cindy, and Lydia, are now, they came into the merge up 6-4. They picked off one of the old Yasha, Brandon, and I should mention, it's those five currently up against Danny and Gary. Danny Boatwright, a female, for those of you who don't know, who may get freaked out when they hear her referred to as she. Anyway, they pick off Brandon at the merge. They're now up 5-6-3. And then they pick off Bobby John, who Steph kind of let stay through to become the jury member, who she knew from her previous season, and we'll get into that after this. So now they're up 6-2. And then they blindside Jamie after Gary, who found the first original hidden immunity idol, not to get into it too much, but at that point, you would play it before the votes had even been cast. So they go into the final eight tribal council. Gary plays the idol before the votes are cast. Rafe's immune. They switch their vote to Jamie. They take out one of their own. So now it's 5-2. So you're dealing with Danny and Gary. Should anyone from Nakum here, do you think, should be trying to orchestrate a flip? Because it requires two people. Because Steph and Rafe are clearly the heads of Nakum. So it takes two of either Judd, Cindy, or Lydia to team up with Danny and Gary and orchestrate a flip. Who do you think that would be the best for? Do you think it ever happens? Do you think this should happen for anyone?
We have to think about it from race perspective as well, I think, but I'll get to that in a minute. For Judd and Cindy, they should know, they don't know, because one of the reasons they're goats in the first place is because they're not that self-aware. But they should know, at least, that the only way they can win is by going up against each other. And for that to happen, I don't think it really makes a difference whether they flip or whether they stay as they are. If they do flip, who are they going to take out? They can't take out Rafe. They don't want to take out Steph, I think, because she's another potential goat, and they don't want to have their games contingent on the other surviving. They want to have outs in the form of Steph taking them to Final Two as well. So they'd have to take out Lydia, but it seems like a fairly useless thing to do if you're going to make a move of that magnitude.
Yeah, and the thing is, Lydia was clearly feeling on the outs at the bottom of this group. I just watched this episode in preparing for this. There's a great scene in the beginning where Steph, Rafe, Judd, and Cindy feel like they've got the game locked up, and they're up on top of the Aztec ruins or the Mayan ruins, drinking their coffee, talking about, oh, this is going to be great when we're the final four. Realistically, having the flip happen, I don't know that it was ever going to happen here, especially when you're dealing with Danny and Gary, in terms of two capable players. So yeah, I guess I tend to agree. I think once Gary lost immunity, that was it. But I do want to just briefly talk about the storyline. It's interesting now that the 5-2, the two are Danny and Gary, because they had one of my favorite storylines in Survivor history. Gary Hogaboom was a quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys, and Danny Boatwright is a football announcer on the radio, like she does a football radio show. And Gary came in with the plan to not tell anyone who he was because he feared that his celebrity would get him voted out or people wouldn't want to vote for him. And Danny, who starts out on the other tribe and eventually is on the same tribe as him, quickly says, like, all right, that's Gary Hogaboom. I know who he is. He played quarterback, and he's denying it the whole time. And I thought that was great. And, you know, the fix may have been in terms of putting Danny on the same season as Gary, but I thought that was great. And I thought it was really cool that it came down to the two of them. And, you know, obviously we see Danny go on to win the whole thing, so...
Yeah, it was kind of a bad beat for Gary, I think, that he ended up on his tribe
sure.
A sports radio host.
No kidding. Especially, he must have been disappointed when on day one he goes out and she's wearing a Kansas City Chiefs hat and a shirt that says football check.
Right. If you're going to lie about your job when you're a celebrity, you're kind of inviting that to happen to you. Even so, though, it's kind of unlucky for Gary. Also in that episode, Gary, realizing that he needs to make something happen, he goes to Rafe and reminds him that they had an alliance when they were originally on Yasha together. And would Rafe consider flipping over maybe with Steph, maybe with Lydia, and voting with him and Danny? So I guess my question would be, do you think Rafe should have done this, and why? And who with?
That's interesting, because now I think we have somewhat different views about Rafe in terms of how he is as a jury threat. I thought Rafe would beat anyone. And I just from the times we've talked, not on the podcast, but other times, I think he thought there were people who could beat him, potentially Lydia, potentially Danny. You know, we saw that in the final three. That became a big question. Could Danny beat Gary? If I'm Rafe, I'm pretty comfortable that I can beat Steph. I'm pretty comfortable I can beat Judd. I know I can beat Cindy. I know I can beat Judd, too. Lydia, I guess maybe I'm worried about, but if I'm Rafe, I'm probably trying to stay the course, burn as few bridges as possible.
Right. If I'm Rafe, I definitely don't want to go up against Gary or Danny, ideally. I'm always going to go up against someone like Steph or Lydia or Cindy or Judd. Probably not Lydia, but one of those four at least. But the question becomes, does he increase his chances of getting to the final two if he flips now, temporarily joins up with these jury threats so that he can flip back and turn on them later? If I'm Rafe, and I'm on the top of these ruins with Steph and Cindy and Judd, I'm thinking, I'm the biggest threat here. And all three of these people should realize that. So if I go to the final four of these people, I'm putting myself in a bad spot because I have to win challenges to make it to the end, or I should do at least. So because Steph is going to want to take Judd or Cindy, her ideal final three is herself, Judd, and Cindy because both of them will take her and she beats both of them. So it's perfect for her.
Yeah.
If she can boot Rafe or Lydia at the final four, then she's got the game logged up.
Yeah, and I think this more than most seasons, maybe not with Steph in particular, but with someone like even Rafe in particular, I guess Rafe especially, while a very good player, I think he did really want to be a good guy. And I think when you're talking about what Rafe should have potentially done, I think if he stays true and wants, is concerned that people are going to want to vote him out once it gets to Final Five, Final Four, because he's such a big jury threat. I think when you're at Final Seven, if you're Rafe and you're going to orchestrate some kind of flip, you need to get in really good with Cindy or Lydia and promise them some stuff, and I don't know that Rafe was willing to do that lying, and I think that's kind of what could have potentially detracted from this actually happening.
Right. I think we disagree about the extent to which Rafe was playing emotionally. I know you think he was playing more emotionally than I do, but no matter what, if he's going to flip here, it's going to be because he realizes that Steph, Judd, and Cindy should be a tight group. It's in the best interest of all of them to stay together, at least in the short term, and go to the final five together. Because Judd and Cindy obviously need to take each other, and Steph needs to take one of them. And if I'm trying to break up a tight group of three, the last time I can get a majority over that group is at Final Seven, when I can get a team of four together. So if this is going to happen, I'd have to get Lydia, flip over to Gary and Danny, and vote out maybe Steph, maybe Judd, maybe Cindy.
The only counter-argument I have to that is, you know, Rafe famously, once he lost the final immunity challenge to Danny, he immediately went over and released her from the promise that she had made to him that if she won, she would take him. And he did that, he revealed at the reunion, when Probst said, why would you do that when you, you know, take yourself, when she's clearly going to take Steph instead of you, if she doesn't owe you anything. And he said he thought she would take him anyway. And I think he would think the same thing about Steph, or about any of them, where if they had a deal, I think he would have wanted to think that they would have taken him anyway. So I don't think he would have anticipated necessarily people recognize. He may have anticipated them recognizing that he was the biggest threat, but I don't know that he was confident they would have done anything about it. And so I think that makes a big difference.
So your argument is that he's one of these players who was never going to entertain the idea of flipping, so it kind of doesn't really make sense to discuss it in those terms.
No, I don't think so. I'm sorry if that's how it's coming across. I think he was certainly a very capable player, and were the situation different, I think he would be very on board with a flip under different circumstances. That said, I think in this situation with this cast in particular, I feel like Rafe is like the opposite of Russell Hance, where he's willing to make moves, but he wants to still be liked, whereas I think with Russell, he makes moves for the sake of being disliked even sometimes, but that may be going too far. But I think Rafe has kind of this, you know, he was 22 at the time, this kind of belief that people are going to do the right thing in the end, and I think he got that vibe from the cast, and I think he considered the right thing taking him.
So what you're saying is that Rafe is a gay version of Coach?
I guess so. I guess that's what I'm saying. I don't know. Rafe's an interesting player. I think he's a player that deserves to be talked about a lot more than he is.
I agree.
Because he was a very, very good player.
I agree. I personally would have him in my top 10 list of all-time players. I know that would be a controversial statement for a lot of people, but we can get into that another time.
Yeah.
The best counter-argument to the one I found just now, I think, is that it assumes that Steph, Cindy, and Judd are all playing rationally. And if you watch the season, and in particular if you watch Judd, you know that that's certainly not the case.
True.
Steph, I think, wasn't aware of how much she was disliked, and so she might think that she can take Rafe, or she might just feel, well, Rafe has given me his word since day one, I want to go with it. And Cindy and Judd don't like each other. They probably aren't aware that they need to take each other to the end, and they probably don't want to do that anyway. So, if
yeah,
he wants to, Rafe can probably get at least one person from that group to vote out another person from that group when the time comes.
Okay. So, end of the day, if you're Rafe, you're immune. Do you like the Gary boot? Is that what you would also do?
I don't think Rafe had a bad move here. I'm willing to trust his judgment that he made the right move there, just based on what we've seen.
That's fair.
But I think it's a very interesting sport either way. It's a good illustration of what we're going to see as a general principle in these kind of situations where you have, as we said, you have five people on one side and two on the other, where two people from that five can flip over, form a new majority, or a new temporary majority, try and improve their position. And it's interesting to consider in these cases, like, who should do that, who those two should be, and whether that's the right move for them.
Yeah, definitely.
So do you want to move on to Palau then?
Yeah, sure, let's do it.
I can introduce us if you want.
Sure.
Okay, so in Palau, we have 6 versus 1 again. We have Tom, Ian, Katie, Greg, Jen, and Corinne from the dominant Karor tribe. Steph, who is the last remaining Oolong member. Now, it's good to remember at this point that Tom, Ian, Katie, and Steph made original alliance on day one before they were split into tribes when they were all on the same beach together. And that kind of comes into play here, and we'll go into that later. In the meantime, though, while they've been on Karor, Tom, Ian, and Katie have replaced Steph with Greg and Jen. So now, everyone that Tom, Ian, and Katie have been aligned with is still here, along with Corinne, who's just kind of the outsider. At this point, Steph knows that she's, you know, on the outs. People are getting scared that she's still in the game. They're worried that she's available, that they don't want to have to deal with anymore. So she goes to Tom and asks whether their alliance that they had at the beginning is still valid. And he, rather foolishly, I think, just doesn't outright deny this, but at least strongly hints at it. So now Steph is in panic mode. She's scrambling. She's trying to get any group of people together she can to try and vote off Tom or whoever they'll agree to vote out. And so we have what I think is another interesting situation where pretty much anybody could be booted, and for a variety of reasons. And we can go into that.
Definitely. And I think first among those, the first person you have to look at in terms of who in everyone's best interest to vote out would be Tom Westman. Because now we're at Final 7. He ends up not winning. Ian wins immunity, first of all, who's his only real competitor. Greg theoretically could beat him in some stuff, but hasn't really shown it. I guess Greg won a reward. Excuse me. So Tom is now in this situation going into Tribal Council where he's not immune. He knows he's going to be a big target. They're up 6-1. Janu's just quit. And perhaps a big mistake he made was at the previous Tribal Council when Janu quit. Prior to her quitting, he made it kind of clear through what he was saying that Steph was going to be the one to go should they end up going to a vote, which they didn't. But now Steph has that in the back of her mind. Now, the thing that was interesting to me is that the route Tom chose to take was, or at least at first, was he appealed to his tribe by saying, you know, the reason we're in this cushy of a position in the first place is because I chose to turn my game on early and just be a complete challenge monster, and they ended up winning every single immunity. And that's why we're in such a great position is because of me, and please don't punish me for that. And that being said, great Tom, thanks for getting us here. In my opinion, you're going to get punished if I have anything to do with it, especially, sure, you know, given that he's not immune. So basically, I think, what are the arguments, if you're anyone else, against not voting out Tom? Other than, you know, Katie and Ian had been very loyal to him throughout, and it's true that he had done a ton for their tribe to put him in that position. So if you're thinking about not voting out Tom, are there reasons beyond just you feel you owe him a debt of gratitude, you know what I mean?
If I'm Ian, I consider wanting to keep Tom in the game because he's going to be loyal to me, just based on the agreement we've had for a long time. And also because he's going to be seen as a bigger threat than me for as long as he's in the game. And I can make the argument to my tribe that they need to keep me around to compete with Tom, similar to the argument that Aris made to his tribe that they need to keep him around to compete with Terry.
Yeah, right.
So
yeah, I actually have to draw that parallel
as
well.
I think it might legitimately be in Ian's best interest to do that. I don't think it's in the best interest of anyone else to do that. So if we agree that everyone else should be trying to vote out Tom, I think we have to look at it through Tom's eyes if we want to get some more insight into the situation.
Sure.
So it seems that Tom has a few different routes he can take here. So he has the potential for renewing the original alliance with Ian, Katie, and Steph. He can try and appeal to Greg and Jen to keep their five together and vote out either Steph or Karen. Or he can do something completely different, and it's not quite sure what that would be. But what he does is he replaces Steph in his alliance with Corinne, and he gets everyone else to vote out Steph. And this is against this weird backdrop of Katie defecting from this alliance, trying to get all the women together to vote out Tom, and he has to be aware of this vote as well. So what ultimately ends up saving him is he has this not explicit alliance, but this agreement with Corinne that they're going to look out for each other. And so when Corinne hears about this plan from Katie, she runs to Tom, tells him about it, and he manages to persuade everyone to vote out Seth instead. Now, if I'm Tom here, I don't get the logic behind voting off Seth. It might be that he's forced to do this by the position he put himself in at the previous tribal council when he told Seth effectively that she was being kicked out. But tell me if you think I'm going off the reservation here. I think his best move here is to try and get Jen voted out, and here's why. He knows that this Women's Alliance has only been dismantled because Corinne has sacrificed her position for him, basically. But he does know that she's going to be willing to do that again. And if he makes it to the final five with Ian and three women, it's very possible that Corinne might go along with it then when she wouldn't have done now. So if he's there in that situation, he has to win Run Immunities or he's gone.
Yeah, definitely. That Women Alliance, you know, especially with hearing that Katie was the one who kind of instigated it at Final Seven, was probably doesn't sit well with me if I'm Tom, in terms of thinking I could have counted on Katie to stay with me and vote with me at Final Seven.
Right. So if I'm Tom, I want a woman to go to Final Seven and preferably at Final Six as well. So we can vote out Katie, Corinne, Jen, or Seth. I don't really want to vote out Katie because there's a chance she's going to stay loyal to me if she thinks it is in her best interest. And also, she's not going to win any challenges, so that's not an issue either. I don't want to vote out Corinne because, again, she's loyal to me, and Tom knows that she's loyal to him because she's just come and spilled his beans to him, and she's not going to win anything either. So it's between Steph and Jen. If I'm Tom, I think I can survive by offering Steph safety because she's going to take whatever will keep her in the game at this point. And if that involves sticking with Tom, then she's going to do that.
Are you concerned at all about the bridges you may be burning on a jury that would have probably, at least, you know, you're certainly not throwing away jury votes if you just steamroll the entire season, as we go on to see when Tom wins, but you're potentially creating animosity on the jury that wouldn't have otherwise been there had you kind of like what we saw with Coach voting Cochran out first this season, where by doing so, you're now leaving yourself with only your own original tribe left, and at the final tribal council, you can say, look, I took everyone out before you, and then it just eventually had to happen.
Well, I think Tom can say that, because he can cite the deal that he made with Steph and Ian and Katie on day one, and say, sure, I felt some loyalty to you, Greg and Jen, but I had this agreement with Steph from day one, and I felt I needed to honor that. So he has an excuse there. But if I'm Tom, I'm acting under the assumption that I can beat anyone on a jury vote, and I just need to maximize the chances I get there in the first place.
So just an interesting theoretical question. If we're Steph right here, and this would apply to anyone who's down 6-1, is there any – what can you really do when you're the one – I guess we'll see it, you know, in season – I guess we just saw it in season 9, which we'll get to after this. But when you're down 6-1 in Steph's position, given these other six that you're up against, do you think there was a way she could have gotten in? And if she could get in, apart, you know, other than with Ian, Katie, and Tom, because I would argue those aren't people she wants to be going to the end with because they'd all presumably beat her, I think. Right. So is there a way for Steph to kind of orchestrate and get someone in there and maybe get Karen out and take her spot? Or is there, generally speaking, I guess, is there anything that the one can really do, or do they just have to go with any deal that's offered?
Well, there are two approaches you can take. You can either go to the people at the bottom and try and explain to them that they're not going to go to the end, they need to flip now, vote out the people at the top. Or you can go to the people at the top and try and make them think that you'll be a better ally to them than the people at the bottom. So if we go back to Guatemala quickly, this is kind of what Danny did with Rafe and Steph. She got in good with them, made them think that she would be a loyal partner to them throughout the game, making them more willing to turn on their allies to keep her in. Whereas if we look at Chris in Season 9, which we're going to do in a minute, he had to go to the people at the bottom and get them together in this kind of motley coalition to vote out the people who are running the show.
That's right.
And it's unclear which approach is better in general. Here, though, I think Steph should be going to Tom because she knows that he values loyalty. She knows that they've had this agreement from the beginning. She can just press that as hard as she can and hopefully make an inroad there.
All right, so back to earlier, if they do somehow manage to get Tom out at Final Seven, who do you see with six left kind of taking control and really stepping up and putting themselves in a position to win the game? Who's that great for?
Well, at this point, the two power players seem to be Ian and Greg. And I think Greg is in a good spot here because Ian is going to be seen as a bigger threat. So if Ian doesn't win immunity, you can get people together to vote out Ian. Or if you want to, you can team up with Ian, try and make a deal with him because of that, because you know that you always have him there as a buffer. So you can maybe kick out one of the women and then move into the final five in a pretty good spot either way.
Cool.
Going back to the argument I was making about why they should kick out Jen, or why Tom should kick out Jen anyway. If you want to kick a woman out, so we can't kick out Katie or Corinne or Seth, so it has to be Jen. I think Greg is a defensible group as well there, but I think the threat of the Women's Alliance is so great that you want to kick out Jen there on the basis that you can kick out Greg next week anyway. In addition, if you keep Greg there, you know that he's very paranoid about Steph, and you know that Steph is going to do whatever it takes to stay in the game, which would involve voting Greg out. So you can set those two against each other. And if the Women's Alliance does form, you can use that as a threat to get Greg to join you if you have to.
Excellent. Sorry, I don't even know what to say. That's very well thought out.
It's fairly unconventional, I think, because you think, well, why vote out Jen there? But I think it makes a lot of sense. You could argue that it's worth keeping the two of them in the game so that you can point to their friendship as a reason to get them out instead of you, if you're Tom.
Greg and Jen.
Yeah. So let's say you're at the final five and Greg and Jen are still there and you don't win immunity. You might think, well, I can get people to vote one of them out because if they're at the final four together, they can force a tie against whoever they want. And I can use that as a threat to get other people to vote with me against probably Greg.
Yeah, most likely.
I think this is illustrative of a general principle that if you're a big threat, you're someone like Tom or Ian, it's sometimes correct to want other big threats to stay in the game as well. A lot of people take the approach to just eliminate everyone who's a big threat so that I can power my way to the end. Often, though, that doesn't happen and they fall short. And if they had kept someone else in the game, it's unclear they would have done better, but it's certainly possible they would have done.
Definitely. Definitely. That's a great point that, you know, you don't see taken into consideration a lot, certainly not in the older seasons. Definitely. So, very interesting stuff. That was good.
Yeah. Do you want to move on to Vanuatu?
Sure. Let's do it.
We'll take this.
Sure. All right. So, Vanuatu, we have an interesting season. We start off men versus women. Slowly but surely, the men get picked off. The women come up. The women take control post-merge. It's now six women, led by Amy, complemented by Leanne, Julie, Eliza, Scout, and Twyla, up against the last man standing, Chris. And this is complicated when Chris, you know, his two buddies, Lee and Sarge and Chad, are over on the jury, and Chris does not win the final seven immunity, and it looks like it's a done deal. And this is one of those situations, like we spoke about earlier, where, like Dom just touched on, where the one is going to try to appeal to the bottom three out of the six and say, let's turn the tables on these people and give all of us a chance. So, first of all, I guess if you're Chris, what are you looking for in terms of cracks in that alliance, and who do you think are the people you want to be going to the end with?
Well, if I'm Chris, I see Amy as this dominant leader who's controlling everything. And I have to think that given her kind of overbearing personality, there are going to be people in there who are dissatisfied with Amy that might want to take her out. So
certainly.
I know that I need four votes, I'm going to make something happen, and ideally, if I can pick up two votes in the form of Scout and Twyla, that's going to be what I have to do. Because if I don't get them, then I need to get everyone else except for Amy, and that's going to be difficult. So my first port of call is Scout and Twyla, and see where they're at.
Yeah, and I think this is also an interesting situation because of, again, the makeup of these six women. They're not necessarily a tight six. There are definitely some conflicting personalities, especially when you're dealing with people like Twyla and Eliza and Amy. There's definitely going to be some cracks people can take advantage of, and, you know, we obviously see Chris go on to do that masterfully.
Right, and remember, Twyla and Scout hate Eliza and Julie, and the Feenies,
right,
they hate them back. So one of those two pairs is going to be willing to vote out the other one.
Yeah. And again, you know, there's not a ton to this because obviously we're going to be approaching this as Chris. I guess Amy theoretically, but Amy's best boot is probably Chris. When you're Chris, Amy's the clear boot that you want to send out, at least at first. But they end up going Leanne. So I'm guessing if you're Chris, you're not interested in reflipping at a certain point, other than, you know, straight up lying to Eliza and booting her at Final Four. But I don't really consider that a flip. But the group that you go with now is the group you're looking to go with to the end, right?
Yeah, if I'm Chris, I'm doing whatever helps me survive, because that's all I can at this point. I don't really have much room to play beyond that. My ideal final three probably is the one he ended up with Trial and Scout, because he can beat them in a challenge and he can beat both of them in a jury vote. Or at least he can beat Twyla. Scouts, it's unclear.
Yeah, he can, definitely can beat Twyla. You know, you could probably argue maybe Eliza would be better, but certainly she's going to put up more of a fight in a challenge than Scout is.
Yeah, if you think maybe final three of Chris, Eliza, and Twyla, where Twyla will take Chris and Chris can take Twyla, and Eliza might take Chris over Twyla. But I think Eliza wins in that situation. And if I'm Chris, I'm comfortable just having to beat Twyla and Scout in a challenge. If I lose, then so be it. If I don't, then I've won. It's locked up.
Yeah, and again, you know, the rest of these seasons, either as we get into the older seasons, there wasn't a ton of creative gameplay going on, and then the conditions were such that there just weren't that many truly interesting scenarios, and the most interesting stuff was just people trying to avoid getting pegonged.
Right, and here it's not even clear that you can give all that much credit to Chris. The only reason this happened at all was because Leanne, in one of the worst movies of all time, told Twyla and Scout that they were being kicked out of the Final Four agreement. And what else were they going to do? They teamed up with the people who weren't in that new agreement and voted out the people who were.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, you know, anything else to add about Vanuatu?
No, that's pretty much it.
All right, these next few seasons should be fairly quick, with the exception of probably Pearl Islands and maybe Marquesas. Season 8 was yet another Boston Rob, like a masterpiece heading into the Final 7. He was up 6-1. There was nothing that was ever going to happen except Sheehan won immunity.
And this is identical to Redemption Island, where, like you said, Rob was in control, nothing was ever going to happen, even though it almost definitely should have done, and that's pretty much all there is to say.
Yeah, that, you know, Boston Rob's going to Boston Rob.
Right. So we move on now to Survivor 7, Pearl Islands, and we have a fairly intriguing situation here, where we have three distinct alliances. We have the remnants of the Drake tribe, Sandra and Krista, the former Morgan tribe, Tuana and Dara, and then the Outcast plus Fairplay, so Burton, Lil, and Johnny Fairplay. And Rupert has just been voted out in the biggest blindside of the season so far. The Outcast plus Fairplay teamed up with Morgan, voted out Rupert. Sandra and Krista understandably upset about this, so they try and get something together at Final 7. And as we said, Final 7 is where a reshuffle is most likely to happen, and so that's what leads in to what we have now.
Yeah, and this is a situation where what really ends up, Johnny Fairplay himself kind of made the Rupert Burt, or excuse me, made the Rupert boot go through, and now he's in a situation where, in order to make that happen, he used Tawana and Dara, but now they're in a spot where they could conceivably re-flip on the person who just gave them new life in this game and join up with the remnants of Drake and take out Johnny Fairplay and the Outcasts.
Right.
So, I don't know where you want to start with this. I guess if you're, I guess even though they're kind of backed into a corner, they now have room to play with Tawana and Dara. What should they be thinking about in terms of who they want to be going to the end with?
Yeah, I think it's worth looking at it if you're Drake, if you're Morgan, and then if you're the Outcast. So if you're Morgan, if you're Tawana and Dara, you can either stick with this new five-person alliance with the Outcast and Fairplay, or you can try and team up with Sandra and Krista, presumably vote out Burton, and then Fairplay, and go to the final five with Lil. It seems to me that Morgan are in a bad position no matter what they do. If they stay with the Outcast plus Fairplay, they vote out Krista first, presumably, then Sandra. But then they're in the final five, they're outnumbered 3-2, and none of the Outcasts or Fairplay have any incentive to flip and join up with Tuana and Dara. So they're just going to be picked off at that point unless they win immunity. However, if they team up with Sandra and Krista, then they go into they boot Burton and then Fairplay, go into the final five with Lil, and Lil has an incentive to team up with Sandra and Krista because she's more likely to beat Krista than she is to beat either Tuana or Dara. And she's more likely to beat Sandra and Krista in a challenge as well. So whatever they do, they're in a bad spot. However, that doesn't mean that they have no correct play here. I think their better move is to team up with Sandra and Krista just because there's a chance that, say, if Lil wins immunity at Final 6, they have to keep around Fairplay. Fairplay teams up with them instead. There are a lot of things that can happen differently, whereas if they keep Burton and Fairplay in the game, they're both rational players. They know that their best interest is to keep Lil solid with them. They're going to do that. At least in this way, they have outs if anything weird happens.
Yeah, that's very fair. But in this situation, how does one of them go on to win? Because no matter what, they're going to be down, presumably they're going to be down 3-2, unless Assuming they end up with Lil as their fifth, so do they consider, as Lil as their other person with them and the two Drakes in the final five, so do they consider maybe keeping someone like Fairplay and trying to make a deal with him, because they know he'll take deals to go through to the final five and then to the final four and final three with him? Or do you think he'd be hesitant of that because obviously they're going to take each other? Do you think they have outs to win at this point, I guess, is the question. And if so, how do they do that?
I don't think either outcome is good for them as a pair. I think it's better for each of them individually if they go with Sandra and Krista, because neither of them are very good at challenges, and if I'm Dara, let's say, I might be able to just win my way to the end, whereas I'm less likely to do that if I'm up against Burton. So.
That's true. Okay, but even say you take Burton out at Final 7, you're then left with Fairplay and Lil. Assuming Lil does not win immunity at Final 6, is there more merit in keeping Fairplay, would you definitely be taking Lil to the Final 5 with you?
That's something I hadn't really considered. The argument against keeping Fairplay is that he's a rational player and that he knows his best moves to team up with Sandra and Krista, so he's going to do that. I don't see any way in which Tirana and Dara make the final three together as a pair, but I think it's quite possible that one of them goes on an immunity run and makes it the final two and wins.
Yeah, and that would presumably be Dara rather than Tirana. Dara actually got a couple challenge wins.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. So let's move on to Drake, I guess. Now, Drake seems to be in a much better position, Krista and Sandra.
Yeah.
Do you want to go into why that would be?
Well, for the same reasons that Morgan in a bad position, Drake in a good position, because whatever happens at Final 7, they're in a pretty good spot either way. Because I don't think Sandra or Krista ever leave at Final 7. I think it's always either Tuan or Dara or Burton or Fairplay, exactly, and Lil never goes either, I don't think. So if I'm Sandra and Krista, I have the option of teaming up with Morgan or teaming up with Fairplay and the Outcast. I think teaming up with Morgan is better, because once we get to Final 5, whoever's left there is going to side with me being Sandra or Krista, against Tuan and Dara. The fact that person is good in challenges is an issue, because if I'm Sandra, let's say, I go to the Final 3 with Krista and somebody else. If Krista wins, we go together. If I win, I can take Krista, it's fine. But that third person is going to win the challenge most of the time, and they're always going to take Krista.
Yeah.
So it might in Sandra's interest to vote out Krista at some point. Quite how she would do that, I don't know, but it's definitely something she should have in her mind.
That's a very good point. I'm sorry I keep interrupting you. Okay. So what we ultimately see happening is Drake teaming up and voting out Tawana at Final 7. What do you think about that in terms of who that was good for? Specifically, I guess Fairplay would be naturally the one to discuss who it's good for, because he's kind of the free agent in all this.
Naturally, it was an excellent move by Fairplay. He spun a lie about Tawana. He told this to Krista, who then told this to Sandra, and then Sandra spazzed out and decided to vote off Tawana. Another example of a great move by Fairplay that doesn't really get recognition by a lot of people.
Yeah, I would put that along with his getting Lil and Dara to turn on each other at Final Four to keep himself alive.
And crucially, I think, it's an example of a bad play by Sandra. Even if it's the correct move for her, and for reasons we went over, I don't think it is, her decision wasn't a rational one, it was an emotional one. Oh, Tawana did this, we're going to vote off Tawana. She says herself she doesn't think more than 3 days ahead at any given point, and I think this is great evidence of that.
Anything else, I guess, about season one? I guess this could have gone a number of different ways, so I guess we can get into that. If Morgan and Drake team up, they go Burton, I guess we've been over?
Yeah, Burton, then Fairplay, barring immunity.
All right, I think we're good on this, then?
Yeah, it's fine. I think this is this is notable for its novelty more than because it's actually a difficult decision for any parties involved. Just because we hadn't really had a 3-2-2 alliance structure before and haven't had one since.
Yeah, I guess Nicaragua was probably the closest thing, and then with the 3-3-3 at Final 9.
Right.
But speaking of things that, you know, at the time were great because of the novelty, we'll move on to Season 6, and I know a lot of people that are probably listening are big fans of Rob Cesternino, and the Final 7 of that spot was it looks standard now, but at the time it was very unprecedented, because that was the first real big flip, because up and through the first 5 seasons, the winners had all come basically through pogongings. There was the flip in Marquesas at Final 9 that we went over in the last podcast, but this is the first real individual flip where a guy had a Final Four deal and then completely cut out those other three and not eventually, but for the Final Seven vote for the time being, voted against those three. Now, it's important to note that it's a player of Rob Cesternino's caliber doing this, and this is a situation where he's not burning jury votes in the process. And this isn't even really one that we need to get into that much, because if you'll recall, Alex told him while he was half asleep that once they get to Final Four, Alex, Rob, Jenna, and Heidi, that Rob was going to be the one to go. And Rob obviously isn't going to want that. So we went with the other three, Krista, Butch, and Matthew. And, you know, there's not a ton to get into. It's kind of, in my opinion at least, a no-brainer from Rob. What do you believe? I'm assuming you wouldn't go to a certain fourth-place finish in his position.
Oh, it's obviously correct for him to flip. Whether or not he would have done that if he hadn't been prompted to by Alex, I think it's unclear. But, yeah, once he knows that he's in fourth place, it's definitely correct for him. It's not a decision you have to think about, really.
Yeah, and I would say that was really the decision. Well, you know, for a thinking player, it's very straightforward, but that really separated Rob Cesternino from, up until that time, anyone we'd ever really seen play in terms of willingness to flip on his own people and then try to get them back.
Right, and Fair Play said that when he was preparing for going on Survivor, one of the things he focused on most heavily was Rob's game in the Amazon, because he realized that it was unprecedented at the time and that it may be held the key to figuring out what might happen in these unprecedented situations. In these kind of situations.
Yeah, and that was, you know, with very good reason for Fair Play watching that. You know, he executed the flipping strategy well the next season. We just went over that. So, you know, Amazon, great season. I'm sure we'll talk a ton about Rob Cesternino over the course of this podcast. I think we're good on the Final Seven, though, for now. Mm-hmm. All right. So let's get into Thailand. Thailand was another standard 5-2 situation where a tribe took advantage at the merge. Or actually, I guess they took advantage pre-merge and then just picked them off. They're at 5-2. It's another one of those spots where the people on the bottom probably should flip, but they've never really considered it.
Right. Brian manages to do a good job keeping everyone in Trigon in check. None of them really consider flipping at all. So we end up with the Trigon Final Five, and Brian wins fairly anticlimactically from there.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm sure in the future we'll talk a lot about Brian Heideck. A lot of people are going to forget about him by now, but for those who remember him, a very controversial a winner, but and I believe both of our opinions, one of the best ever.
Right, and we might talk about him a bit on the Hall of Fame podcast as well, spoiler alert, but he definitely deserves to be in that conversation.
Definitely.
You want to move on now to Marquesas?
Indeed. Okay, so we'll look now at the Marquesas. We are up another 5-2 situation where instead of a merge majority just picking people off, this happened at the Final Nine. If you missed what happened, I suggest listening to our last podcast where we go over it. So now those five that have banded together at Final Nine have picked off two of the Row 2 people. And that group of five is interesting because it's two very clear duos. There's Pascal and Nalia, there's Vesepia and Sean, and then you have Kathy hanging somewhere in the middle. So this spot's actually much, and then you also, you know, with seven people left, you have the two remaining Row 2 in Tammy and the General. So there's a lot that can happen here. And I want to see what you think. I think at the time wasn't a spot that was really analyzed, first of all, because Survivor analysis didn't really exist back then. But this is a spot that I think kind of has kind of a counterintuitive, maybe the solution's the wrong word, but at least a possibility that may not jump to people's minds, and that would be Kathy going at Final Seven, and I'll let Dom talk about that.
Right. So if Tammy and the General are the next two boots, which it seems like they would be, we end up with the Final Five of the two pairs plus Kathy, who becomes a swing vote then. Now, if I'm Sean and Vesepia, I'm very worried about Kathy being in that position, because Kathy can beat anyone in a jury vote at this point. So all she has to consider is who can she beat in challenges, because she knows that neither pair is going to take her to the Final Two.
Right.
And it's pretty clear that she can beat Nalia and Pascal in challenges more easily than Sean or Vesepia. So almost certainly one of those two is going to go at Final Five, and then the only way the other survives the Final Four is if they win immunity or if Kathy flips and decides to force rocks randomly.
Yeah.
So if I'm either of those two, I try and persuade Nalia and Pascal to vote off Kathy. Whether or not it makes sense for them, I don't know. But I think it does anyway, and for this reason. Given that Kathy's good in challenges as well, And that, given that Nalea and Pascal want to take each other to the final two, it makes sense for them to take someone like the General instead, who isn't good in challenges, and who they're going to beat more easily in the final immunity challenge.
Certainly. That's certainly fair. And, you know, at the time, I think none of the five even ever really considered breaking apart as long as there were other former Row 2 there, because I felt like, you know, I believe they'd all spent time, except for Sepia, had spent time as tribe members with the Row 2 4. I don't think any of them really cared for them. They didn't care for how they were treated. And I think just realistically, those five that banded together to flip together at Final 9, while it may have been in their best interest to then turn on Kathy at Final 7, it's one of those things where we were so early into Survivor and it was such a personal game that I don't think it was ever going to happen.
Right, and you can't imagine someone like Pascal or Nia ever making an aggressive, bold move like that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Once Kathy survives the Final 7, she needs to make something happen herself at Final 6 if she wants to not have to win a challenge to make Final 2. But realistically, I don't think that was ever going to happen either. I think those five were going to be the Final 5 for the moment John left, unless an immunity win disrupted that plan.
I agree. Are you good on anything else for Marquesas?
Okay, that's fine for me. The other three are fairly formulaic, I think. We'll go over them quickly.
Yeah, we can just run through them. We've done the first, 19. We can do the next, or the first 20. We can do the last three.
Sure.
Very quickly, Africa, it was a 4-3. Nothing was ever going to change. Four, we're going to pick off one of the three. I guess one thing to note there is that there creates some kind of Final 6 dynamics that could get interesting. Because Lex has all of these past votes on him, so people could conceivably flip to the two remaining, force a tie on Lex, and get Lex gone. Any of the Boron could get Lex out at Final 6 if they wanted to. Yeah, it was pretty straightforward. So was Australia.
Australia is more interesting than it might appear at first, because what happens is, after they boot Jerry at Final 8, Tina, Colby, and Keith, or rather Tina and Colby, bring in Roger and Liz as a kind of backup plan. They have this kind of Christian family mentality, the same sort of thing we're seeing this season. So they have this insurance in place in case, Keith or Amber or whoever tries to make something happen. And Roger and Liz, as a result, are perfectly fine letting Nick get booted because they were going to be in the minority anyway. They didn't really have a connection with Nick. So Nick was a logical boot for pretty much everyone at that point.
Yeah, it made sense, and it was, again, straightforward. The early seasons were very straightforward, and again, it's important to remember, they were much different games, and people took them much more personally, which tended to come in, or at least the question of ethics in terms of not wanting to hurt someone's feelings came into play a lot more back then.
Yeah, and it's interesting to remember that Amber, after Joey's booted, tried to flip over to Nick and Roger and Liz, and that was vetoed by Liz, who bought into what Tina was selling her. So excellent forward-thinking move by Tina, I think. Whether or not she did it with that intent, we don't know, but that was the outcome and led to Tina winning, ultimately.
Yeah, absolutely. That was tremendous foresight by Tina, regardless of whether or not that was her intention in terms of solidifying them from and preventing them from flipping. Right. The last one, season one, it was a straight, it was where we get the word pagonging, is because Pagong was getting picked off one at a time.
Right, there were suggestions that Rich might have left at Final 7 if he didn't win immunity, but we'll never know for sure, and it's hard to speculate about what would have happened 22 seasons ago.
Yeah, I thought the editing, the story throughout that episode was that Rich might be the one to go if he doesn't win immunity. Then once he does win immunity, it's a foregone conclusion. I always considered that to be a just kind of like a diversion from the obvious boot by the editors.
Right. Yeah.
Just, yeah.
So we've got 23 seasons worth of analysis, and we now have what we need to make some general comparative conclusions about what happens in these kinds of spots. We start with situations where the tribe is split 4-3. So we saw this in Torquentines, we saw this in Amazon, and in Africa and Australia. Here, in each of these cases, the decision was pretty obvious. Either generally no one has anything to gain by flipping because they're trading fourth place for fourth place and they piss off jury votes if they flip.
Right.
In season 6, we saw Rob flipping on Jenna, Heidi, and Alex. But that's because he was essentially told to by Alex. who informed him that he was in fourth. So, again, a pretty obvious decision there. So those cases are the least interesting of all of them, I think. 5-2, situations where charges split 5-2. So we had Heroes vs. Villains, Gabon, Fans vs. Favorites, China, Cook Islands, Guatemala, Thailand, Marquesas, and Borneo. So a lot of them.
Yeah.
A lot of these seem to come down to one player in the majority. So if we think back, we had Kenny in Gabon, Rafe in Guatemala, Todd in China, having to think about their position in that majority. If they think they're going to get taken to the end, then they can stay true to that, and it's fine. But if they think that they're going to be taken out, you know, in fifth or fourth as a threat, then they have the tools and the ability to make something happen with those two remaining votes and someone else at the bottom of that alliance.
Yeah. And then the last remaining one is 6-1.
Yeah. So we saw that. We saw that this season, South Pacific, last season, Redemption Island, also in Fiji, Exile Island, and Palau, as well as All Stars. It seems that these vary quite a lot, where either it's pretty standard, so All Stars and Redemption Island, Fiji, where the one just gets picked off and the player at the top of the alliance coasts to either the win or the final two in case of All Stars. Or the season is, or the spot is very interesting, as in the case of this season and Exile Island and Palau, where the one person either shouldn't have gone or didn't go, and there's a lot of capacity for interesting dynamics to come into play there.
Excellent, yeah. Anything else to add before we close this up?
I think that's about it, unless you've got anything more.
I think I'm good. I want to thank everyone for staying tuned this whole time. If you made it, we salute you. We thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again soon.
Yeah, stay tuned for the Hall of Fame podcast that's coming in a few days.
Absolutely.